spectacle unfolding around Lindsay Clancy after she murdered her three young children has exposed a raw nerve in the culture that no amount of pink t-shirts and I am Lindsay slogans can hide. Hundreds of women turned out at the courthouse and across social media to stand with the woman who ended the lives of Cora, Dawson, and Callan, framing the killings as the tragic result of a failed mental health system rather than an act that demands accountability.
We feel she's very sleep deprived. Her job as a labor and delivery nurse working night shifts and three children is
a lot.
I feel like the system failed her. She was begging for help and no one was there. I don't know if us being here will make her feel any better, but I mean, she's living in hell right now.
Just wanted to support Lindsay and just say it could be, you know, one of my sister-in-laws, it could be one of my best friends, and it could be me. So just here to support.
We are hearing her. We see that she tried everything. And I really do believe that she went into a state of psychosis.
The 8-month-old baby was born. The 3- and 5-year-old were in daycare full-time. Patrick took a 12-week paternity leave, and they hired a nanny to help with the newborn baby. After the 12-week leave was over, Patrick could see that Lindsay needed more help and support, so he decided to move his office into home and started working from home, so they decided they didn't need the nanny anymore because Patrick was going to stay home. And you guys are saying that this woman had no support? That is false.
Her behavior was calm and cooperative?
Yes.
Didn't see anything about her behavior that would indicate to you that she was responding to some type of voices or hallucination that you couldn't see?
Not during my evaluation.
Did you speak to Ms. Clancy again? During that meeting, she denied suicidal intent, correct?
That's correct.
She denied homicidal intent, correct?
Yes.
She denied having auditory or visual hallucinations, correct?
Yes.
She reported her mood as okay, is that correct?
Yes.
And she told you she was looking forward to moving to Spalding, correct?
Yes.
She also denied any confusion or disorientation, is that correct?
Yes.
You described her mood as okay on that day?
Yes.
And you described her as future-oriented on that day?
Yes.
You wrote that the patient reported feeling down about her current situation, her paralysis, and the events leading up to her hospitalization. Is that correct?
Yes.
And you also noted she said her thoughts about what she had done were not constant throughout the day, correct?
Correct.
So she wasn't thinking about killing her children throughout the day, every day, correct?
Correct.
Ordinary observers have pointed out that the children themselves have been all but erased from the conversation, while Clancy is recast as the primary victim, an inversion producing genuine outrage, the systematic destruction of three innocent lives as secondary to one woman's suffering.
She admits it. Everyone admits it. It's all on record. She was on all these psychotropic drugs that can contribute to that, so we want to blame them partially. That's fine, but you know, at the end of the day, she gets the main blame. And there's lots of cases of men killing their kids by strangling them. They all get, I see cases, you know, every few years, there's a lot of them, you know, stacked up over time of where dads have killed 3-4 kids by strangulation the same way. And they get the death penalty. They get death row.
I believe that women are disproportionately, as a sex, disproportionately destroying this country. And I also believe that it is enabled by weak men. So I want to be very clear. I'm not attacking women. I'm attacking both sexes. But we attack men, and rightly so, all the time for excessive aggression, violence, sexual predation, as we should. But we never, ever criticize women for their errors, for their sex-specific flaws, which are largely uncontrolled, uncontained emotion, which explodes and leaks out into horribly destructive areas, such as the sexual mutilation and hormonal castration of young children, most of whom are girls, and most of which is led by women, women therapists, women teachers, women surgeons, women clinical directors, women politicians, women legislators. Even mothers in families are largely driving this, not men, not fathers. Of course, the fathers, they're just standing around letting it happen. So I'm not saying that they're guiltless or blameless, but I'm saying they're not stepping up. And we need strong, ethical men to stand up and to contain the excesses of what I would call toxic femininity.
Many of those questioning the supporters are other women and mothers who reject the idea that shared struggles with anxiety or depression create a license to excuse the unthinkable. The result is a seismic shift that refuses to be ignored, instead opening up the conversation of an entire country plagued by mental illness fueled by the George Soros injustice system. John Bound reporting for the Alex Jones Network at alexjoneslive.com.
Ladies and gentlemen,
When you go to FreedomRx, you have to understand that it's about preserving health and upholding values. Your health, your business, nobody else's. The folks that own this are patriots. They first came to me 4 years ago wanting to do this. I agreed 3. They had it built about a year ago. They kept adding to it, but going through all the stuff we went through, I wanted to wait till we had a new operation to launch it with this incredible sponsor. But now it's ready. There's so many incredible things. The very best testosterone, energy, muscle, libido, mood, sexual health, PT-141. Woo, look out. Talk about the true aphrodisiac. Oxytocin protocols for men and women, longevity, recovery, all the good peptides, the NAD, all of them. HIPAA compliant, your health information is 100% protected. They got everything. Go there now, and it supports this broadcast with the best doctors and nurses, the best backbone, the best people. Your health, your business, nobody else's. Go now to freedomrxhealth.com.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you from the Alex Jones studios here in Austin, Texas, alexjoneslive.com. Big news day today, of course. We've got the big midterm convention that Donald Trump held yesterday. Some differing results from that. Of course, the big announcement of the $5,000 check to everybody, which feels an awful lot like the death of the Republic. We'll get into that, of course, and some other speeches from the night, the standout being Brandon Gill. And, you know, I don't know how everybody else is feeling, but It's like when you go through a bad breakup and you're like, I'm just not ready. I'm just not ready to go out right now. You seem like a great guy, but it's just, you know, I need some time. We need some time to process the betrayal that we've been through. And it's also, it's like, oh, Brandon Gill is saying all the things that we want to hear. Well, what's his angle? What's he trying to pull on us? So, you know, I just feel like an abused dog, afraid to actually trust anybody ever again. So, you know, I wish this wasn't the case. I wish I could show you Brandon Gill's speech and just be like, isn't this amazing? He's our guy. Next president. Let's all go in behind him. But, you know, after a couple rounds of Donald Trump, maybe we need to be a little bit more suspicious of everything. Of course, today is the 10th of September, meaning it is the 1 year anniversary of the assassination of Charlie Kirk. I want to go to clip 2 here. This is a compilation I made out of speeches from his funeral. And it's just, it's one of these time warp situations where it both simultaneously feels like we have been talking about the assassination of Charlie Kirk for 5 years at this point, because of all of the drama that has been caused as a result of the speculation about it. But I also remember the assassination like it happened yesterday. I feel like I remember every minute of that afternoon and evening from the moment it happened. And it just has to be one of the biggest disappointments of the Trump administration's second go is the utter and outrageous failure to do anything as a consequence of this brutal public assassination of a beloved Republican figure. I said it at the time, and thinking about it now, I mean, the Trump administration literally did less following the assassination of Charlie Kirk than they did to punish the University of Florida student that said a bad word to a student wearing an IDF shirt. I mean, at least then we had the DOJ come out and actually lean on the university to make changes and, you know, used it as an example of the severe punishment that would come down on anybody who said anti-Semitic things. Like, we have seen nothing equivalent after the assassination of Charlie Kirk. Now, a year on, They're holding like public celebrations, mocking and celebrating the assassination that the left takes credit for and feels like they got away with. I saw somebody today, I think it was Orrin McIntyre, you know, put it very correctly, saying the failure to sufficiently punish the left following the assassination of Charlie Kirk is going to have consequences for us and our children. When you don't stem the rising tide of extremism from the left, that's going to be a bill that comes due eventually. That's going to cause more assassinations like this. It's pretty much guaranteed at this point. There have been attempts since. But let's go now to clip number two. This is a compilation of speeches that were given at Charlie Kirk's funeral. Let's watch.
What do we do about this guy telling the truth about us? We must make him stop talking. And there's always one guy with the bright idea, and I can just hear him say, I've got an idea. Why don't we just kill him? That'll shut him up. That'll fix the problem. It doesn't work that way. Any attempt to extinguish the light causes it to burn brighter. Every single time.
His voice on earth will echo through the generations, and his name will live forever in the eternal chronicle of America's greatest patriots. He will live forever.
He was killed because his voice made a difference. Because he was showing people the light. And he was killed by the dark.
He was bringing the gospel to the country. He was doing the thing that the people in charge hate most, which is calling for them to repent. It's only an acknowledgement that what Charlie was really saying is that change begins, the only change that matters, when we repent of our sins. Me. A recognition that the real problem is me and how fallen I am. And that was the reason that Charlie was fearless at all times, truly fearless to his last moment.
So our call to action is now. Every one of us needs to be a warrior like Charlie. Train, study, learn, and to speak. Exercise our God-given right to speak and carry that torch that shines brightly because of God's love.
Charlie suffered a terrible fate, my friends. We all know it. We all saw it. Think. It is not the worst fate. It is better to face a gunman than to live your life afraid to speak the truth. It is better to be persecuted for your faith than to deny the kingship of Christ. It is better to die a young man in this world than to sell your soul for an easy life with no purpose, no risk, no love, and no truth.
Accept Charlie's challenge and embrace true manhood. Be strong and courageous for your families. Love your wives and lead them. Love your children and protect them. Be the spiritual head of your home. But please be a leader worth following.
The light will defeat the dark. We will prevail over the forces of wickedness and evil. They cannot imagine what they have awakened. They cannot conceive of the army that they have arisen in all of us. We have beauty. We have light. We have goodness. We have determination. We have vision. We have strength. We built the world that we inhabit now, generation by generation. And we will defend this world. We will defend goodness. We will defend light. We will defend virtue. You cannot terrify us. You cannot frighten us. You cannot threaten us. Because we are on the side of goodness. We are on the side of God. You thought you could kill Charlie Kirk? You have made him immortal!
So it's been 1 year since the assassination, 1 year since really the fate of America was altered in ways that we, you know, will never fully recognize. Again, I just feel bad, like so many people. I didn't respect Charlie Kirk enough while he was still alive. Did not realize the powerhouse he had become and the light that he provided that would be so, so very much missed once he was gone. So hopefully we can not use this chance to exclusively sort of spiral down into speculation about who did it, but no matter who did it and who was behind it, fact is they took a major piece off the board and have made victory that much more difficult for all of us. We can recommit to what Charlie represented while he was alive rather than focus exclusively on his death. It just feels like yet another absolutely squandered opportunity by the Trump administration. And we'll get into, you know, I guess we will get into some of this right now because there are so many examples of supposed foreknowledge seemingly showing that people all around UVU and elsewhere knew that this was going to happen, were bragging about it, was about the fact it was going to happen, celebrating it as soon as it did happen, saying we did it. We have examples like this. End Wokeness posted this. This was posted on September 9th, the day before, posted by a non-binary UVU student saying Charlie Kirk is coming to my college tomorrow. I really hope somebody evaporates him literally. Then again saying, let's just say something big will happen tomorrow. With a smiley face. Now, whether this person was ever actually investigated by the FBI, we don't really know. Likely not. That screenshot isn't even the worst one. The screenshot on the left was posted minutes after by a guy who knew Tyler Robinson personally and even had it in his username. The screenshot on the right was posted 5 days before the assassination took place. He then took a victory lap once the deed was done. Neither of these two people were investigated or charged with anything. So you've got this one person saw Tyler June 30th. We effing did it. And then this other person, Fujo Shinsel. You guys, I have something big coming soon. Just be sure to check the news. You'll know when you see it. And then as soon as Charlie's killed, he posts, well, that's that. Neither of these people, apparently, investigated by the FBI or looked into it. Now, when it comes to the FBI investigation overall, like we know from inside sources that certain foreign involvement was not looked into. Like they forbid him from looking, forbid the investigators for looking into certain international participation in one way or another. And the fact they didn't seem to investigate any of this foreknowledge to me is not contrary to there potentially being a foreign element. You don't investigate something if you don't want to find something. If you think there might be some information out there that you'd rather not get public, well, then you just don't investigate it at all. And I can't help but wonder if that may have influenced the decision of whether or not to go investigate some of these people that seem to show foreknowledge. Maybe powers that be didn't want to know what they'd find if they actually looked into it. And we have to speculate because the FBI has done such a terrible job of actually making people confident in their ability or willingness even to find not just the killer of Charlie Kirk, but anybody he may have been working with. The FBI apparently did interview the person named Omar who posted that Charlie Kirk was coming to his college tomorrow, saying, I hope somebody evaporates him, and then saying something big will happen tomorrow. The FBI interviewed this person who posted apparent foreknowledge of the Charlie Kirk shooting on on September 11th, 2025, and obtained search warrants for their devices, GPS data, social media accounts, etc. I wish we had more details about why investigators ultimately cleared them. So apparently this guy was looked into. It's the guy that posted this one. But they cleared him, supposedly, but never said why they cleared him or how they cleared him. Which I think is similar to the Lance Twiggs, you know, the roommate of Tyler Robinson. Likewise, I think the sort of grace they're giving him is a little bit suspicious as well. But we still await the actual trial. We're hoping that at least some of this information is actually investigated and looked into and we get some solid answers from it. But regardless, I think the giant hole that Charlie Kirk filled in the Republican establishment has been filled up with a bunch of unsavory characters that do not have America's best interests in mind. Something that, despite my differences of opinion when it came to things like Israel with Charlie, never once doubted the man's patriotism or where his loyalty ultimately laid. That's not really the case with some of these other figures, but most of these other figures. And again, whether his break from Israel had anything to do with his assassination, I doubt we'll ever have full confirmation one way or the other. But man, just shocking change in the timeline. It's absolutely horrifying. Not only this was allowed to happen, but that people to this day continue to celebrate it. And of course, we can go over. I mean, just the response of people like on their own TikToks, their own faces at work being like, you know, mocking Charlie Kirk's death. The fact that I had normal, seemingly normal, loving people that I know in my personal life who seem to sort of shrug and say, well, you know, Charlie Kirk said a lot of things that made people mad. So, you know, he kind of deserved it. Or, you know, well, he said he didn't care about gun violence. So I guess, you know, that's him taking. And again, the amazing thing, the sort of horrifying thing, is they literally took basically two quotes of Charlie Kirk. Charlie Kirk, a man who did a show 3 hours a day on radio, had more clips circulating around YouTube than anybody could ever watch in a single lifetime. Like, the man was an engine of content, constantly talking, constantly saying things. Out of everything he'd ever said of the years in the public eye, the left latched on two things that he said, took them completely out of context, completely warped any actual intent or meaning behind what Charlie Kirk was saying, and then used that to justify his murder. Charlie Kirk, an extreme moderate, you might say, somebody who went out of his way to treat people who disagreed with him with respect and consideration, who actually talked to them on their level and tried sincerely to convince them of the correctness of his ideas, and they justify his murder. And the two quotes that they would take out of context was one in which he talked about the evils of DEI, in which he basically said, because of DEI, because racial hiring has taken place, you don't know whether or not the person perhaps flying your plane actually got there on merit or whether they were placed in that position because of diversity requirements. That was then extrapolated out, warped, twisted, distorted, and became Charlie Kirk hated black pilots. Charlie Kirk said black people weren't capable of being pilots and said every time he saw a black pilot, he feared for his life. Right? Just literally nothing that he said, nothing he would believe, right? Charlie Kirk is one of these guys. I don't think he was behind the scenes saying the N-word, right? I think he was sincere about his beliefs. And I think he sincerely would have loved black pilots to exist on the basis of their own abilities and merits, obviously protesting the diversity drive that makes everything unsafe and continues to make everything unsafe. We got planes flying off the runways on a weekly basis at this point. But that was one quote that, again, very sensible, very obvious, very reasonable, really impossible to argue against, but it gets extrapolated to Charlie Kirk hated black people. And then the other one he said was basically, yes, guns are dangerous, but a lot of things are dangerous that we put up with because we understand that the value they represent is greater than the danger they represent. Cars kill a hell of a lot more people than guns, but we as a society have decided it's worth the risk. It's worth the risk. Yes, it's a risk every time you get in your car. Yes, you might die in a flaming accident, but overall, it's worth it because most of the time that doesn't happen. Well, it's the same thing with guns. Yes, guns can be dangerous. Yes, people are murdered with guns. Guns can get in the hands of dangerous people, but the price you pay for getting rid of guns is a hell of a lot worse than anything that happens with them. And that, not justifying or downplaying gun violence, but simply saying that it's a necessary price to pay for freedom and to be armed. That, of course, gets extrapolated out to Charlie Kirk says people dying is just the price of having guns, and it's a price he's willing to pay. And he doesn't care if people get killed by guns. He thinks that's fine. And so he got killed by a gun, and I guess he just got what he deserved. He got what he wanted. So it's like the death of Charlie Kirk. It's like all of the worst impulses from every side of the aisle in America just found this outlet for expression, where it's just the stupid, lowest common denominator, low IQ, inability to even understand what is being said, but willingness to accept that, you know, some 31-year-old father of two, nicest guy in the world, is actually a seething racist who wants everybody to die and he deserves to die. Just this, again, I don't even know how to express it, just lowest common denominator, just like the jury on the Lindsey Clancy trial. This like, well, you know, Charlie Kirk made me feel kind of bad, so I guess he deserved to be murdered. I guess, you know, he didn't cater to me specifically. He didn't repeat exactly what I believe to me in a nice voice, so I guess he's kind of evil and deserves the bullet, okay? So it's this, like, just whatever this is, whatever this inhuman kind of class of people that we're forced to live around that just have no humanity, no empathy, no genuine empathy for anybody other than people that think exactly like them, this just dangerously stupid, these dangerously stupid people that can't even fathom like what they're justifying when they shrug their shoulders at a young man being murdered for his words. But in addition to that, you've got the completely off the rails, incapable of actually making a coherent argument conspiracy theorists that came out about all this, which is just like, it's just been a maelstrom. It's just been a maelstrom of absurdity and ridiculous resistance to actually doing anything to stop the left. And again, it's not like we're incapable. It's not like the powers that be couldn't take this attack and then use it to justify a giant sweeping crackdown. They just didn't want to. They just didn't care. They weren't like Charlie Kirk. He was a one of a kind, that's for sure.
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts. Go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. It's globalist siege. It's globalist economic warfare. It's a globalist blockade, an embargo, sanctions against American populist patriots. For everyone that's been watching and listening to me for years, you've seen the attacks. You've seen the deplatforming. You've seen the court battles, the news articles, the demonization, the bogus default judgments. We even have FBI and CIA operatives on hidden camera talking about how their entire goal was to take me out of the knees by knocking out my ability to accept payments. And that model they used on me, they admit, is for all of you.
Alex Jones.
Yeah, so we were after him.
So with Alex Jones. And the goal with him was what, just to bankrupt him?
Pretty much.
Well, because of First United payments and your support, they failed. And they failed because I had a processor with a backbone who loves America and believes in the free market. One who stands up for American justice and who didn't back down when they received threatening messages and pressure from other major institutions. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you. Meta, Facebook is watching you. Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Consolidation, vertical integration, that is the goal of the BlackRock globalist system. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. This is the key to their entire panopticonic takeover plan in their own words. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, was very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system. Even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. Visit First United Payments now at FirstUnitedPayments.com. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. That's 877-899-1313. The tyrants are counting on us not to innovate. They're counting on us not to migrate to institutions and organizations that are pro-human just like us. This isn't some new company. I've been using them for almost a decade. They're already taking care of most of the patriots. Whether you're a florist, have a gas station, or you're a farmer, or you've got a little five and dime shop or a factory, whatever it is, online merchants, this is the place for you. These guys are patriots, and they're in our corner. They're Americans just like us, and they hate the New World Order with a passion. They believe in the free market, and they understand this is 1776 2.0. 90% of it is information warfare and financial, and this is just as important as the right to self-defense and guns. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down, and First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Thank you so much. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
All right, welcome back, folks. This is War Room Live. We've got a lot of news to get into, a lot of videos to get to. We'll start with some videos from last night, the big midterm convention. The act of desperation. Which, hey, at least I'm glad Trump has not been on the road the entire year like they said that he would be. But still, it's just kind of pathetic. It's just kind of pathetic. It's like an employee who just never does their work, never gets anything done, constantly causing problems. And then they have to come in for their yearly review and they're like talking about how great they are and how valuable they are and how they're, you know, a crucial part of the team and that they do something. It's just like, you know, that we've been here the whole time, right? Like you can try to sell us this, you know, what would have been better is if the entire time you'd been proving through your actions why you're the better choice, not making promises that you fail to uphold, and then basically calling everybody names for pointing that out. I just, you know, I would love to just wholeheartedly embrace what's being said at the Republican convention. I don't believe any of it, though. Not even a little bit. However, this was funny. Representative Brandon Gill kicked off his speech, which was more or less a highlight of the event, with a land acknowledgement. I'm sure you've heard him before. In Canada, it's like a law. It's like you can't actually do an event if you don't start by acknowledging the savage tribes that once roamed across the land. You have to acknowledge you're on stolen land, apparently, which is absurd. So Brandon Gill did his own sort of a land acknowledgement yesterday. Let's go to clip number one here.
Only appropriate that we kick this convention off properly with a land acknowledgement. I'd like to acknowledge that we stand here today in the great state of Texas and the United States of America, the ancestral homeland of great American patriots, pioneers, and explorers who put down roots, fought for freedom all over the globe, and bled and died to build the greatest civilization ever known to man. My friends, we live in the finest country in the history of the world, and we're no longer going to apologize for that.
So again, yeah, love it. Love to see it. You're darn tootin'. That's Southern slang for you're exactly right, sir. You're correct in all your suppositions, my good man. So, you know, I love to see it. I just wish I could get behind it fully. But, you know, Brandon Gill is a guy. He's married to the daughter of Dinesh D'Souza. Dinesh D'Souza, Indian immigrant, major Zionist talking head. So it's like, you know, I think he's the real deal to a certain extent. But like J.D. Vance, you know, it's like, well, you got a lot of connections. You got a lot of unsavory connections. So you saying all the right stuff, it's kind of not enough. And you're still kind of within this approved rhetoric box that we really got to break out of. I don't know if you know this, but for the last couple of years, Texas has been majority non-white. It's been majority Hispanic population. 22% of American school children are white European heritage. 22%. 78% are foreign. Now, when you talk about the explorers and the pioneers, the great warriors that fought and bled and died to create Texas, they did that explicitly against the Mexican government in order to make Texas an Anglo state and have it join the United States. So when you talk about preserving Texas as the land these people fought and died for, we've not succeeded. That's over. It's no longer the case. So until we hear some explicit pro-white sentiments from Brandon Gill, I'm taking everything with a grain of salt. That being said, he clearly has set himself apart now and will likely, you know, we'll see his name cropping up in talks about 2028, maybe not as a presidential contender, but maybe he might run and he might do well at the very least. He'd probably make a very good running candidate for somebody like J.D. Vance. I think a Vance-Gill ticket is not out of the realm of possibility by any means. Let's go now to clip number four. Here again, Texas Representative Brandon Gill talking about the common sense revolution that Donald Trump led in 2024. Let's watch.
2024, like Thomas Paine before him, President Trump led a common sense revolution, and he beat the extremists. But that battle continues today. The other side is telling us exactly what they want to do next. Woke 2.0. the total destruction of America's constitutional order. And this isn't just rhetoric, this is their platform. Democrats are campaigning on abolishing the United States Senate, eliminating the office of the presidency, shutting down the Pentagon, and defunding the United States military. Now, these aren't just policy disagreements that we have with Democrats. The question this election cycle, the fundamental question of this election cycle, is whether America as we know it should even exist. I think we can all remember the good old days when political debates were about marginal tax rates and government spending. Now we're debating whether toddlers can become transgender, whether men can get pregnant, and whether your daughter should have to share a locker room with grown men.
So again, in one sense, he's right. I'd actually disagree with the way that he frames Donald Trump. Well, it's like in an objective view, yes, what Donald Trump was presenting is common sense, because things like expel foreigners from your country that aren't supposed to be there, that is actually common sense. But the fact is, nowadays, what Donald Trump did in 2024 was not take a moderate common sense position. He really went farther to the right than he had been in 2016, than he had done in 2020. He went farther to the right. He doubled down on his rhetoric. He didn't moderate and say, well, you know, we can make a deal and we'll see. No, he doubled down, and he said, we're going to get them all out, and the Haitians are eating cats, and they don't belong here. A little bit more extreme rhetoric than we'd really ever heard from an American politician. So I don't even know if I agree fully with the framing that Brandon Gill puts out there, but, you know, obviously he's exactly right about what the Democrats represent and how they genuinely want to utterly destroy America. The problem is the Republicans have not done anything or even really effectively made the argument that they could do anything to actually rescue the United States. It seems like their entire framework now is the America that we know is there to serve Israel and Israel alone. And this is the elephant in the room that you can't ignore and that they do ignore, which means they're not actually identifying the problem here. It's not that Americans are unwilling to go along with a program to save the country. It's not that the power to affect change is not in the hands of Donald Trump and the Republicans. It's that they haven't used it, refused to use it, and have basically left us out to dry. Now they're telling us you have to vote for us. Otherwise, the people that want to actually destroy your country are going to take over. And we know that, but that's been the case the entire time, which is why we voted for you guys last time. And you haven't done anything at all to substantially stop it, to tangibly reverse the way things are going. Nothing, nothing. And the more you think about it, the less there is to show. I mean, you really get down to the numbers of deportations, it's pathetic. It's really nothing. The zero border crossings is just untrue. We could show you videos every day of people crossing the southern border with absolutely no resistance whatsoever. Maybe they just stopped encountering them so they don't count them. But one thing we do know is that they count any encounters that they get at the southern border as deportations. So again, the numbers aren't trustworthy when it comes to deportations, but that's one of a number of promises that Donald Trump made that he's completely failed to uphold. The private equity takeover of the economy has been absolutely devastating to actual in real life stores and employers, and entire markets have been gobbled up by these scumbags, and Donald Trump has facilitated it every step of the way. He's facilitated the AI takeover, the building of the data centers, the flock cameras. We've not seen anything to represent the benefits of that, only the negatives. So on one hand, you have the leftists who are open in their hatred of the American system and desire to tear it all down. On the other hand, you have the Republicans who make a lot of noises like they love the American system, but seem constitutionally incapable, like physically unwilling to do anything at all to actually change the tide. So I just, you know, I'm playing these videos, but it's like, I wish I could just, hell yeah, Brendan Gill, he's got the right idea. But I'm just like, this is all a con. This is all just a giant confidence game, and I don't buy it at all. We'll go to one more clip from him. Clip number three here. Brendan Gill frames election as the mainstream versus the extreme and accuses Democrats of rejecting American greatness. Let's watch.
This election is very clear. It's the mainstream versus the extreme. Because there's another political movement in our country right now that doesn't believe that America is or ever was great. They sometimes call themselves socialists. Some even call themselves communists. But most of them simply go by Democrats.
Again, he's right, but what are you actually doing to resolve that? And I guess this is the ultimate reframing, that you now have Trump supporters literally cheering the word mainstream, which is really represents everything we were against for the entire first 10 years of the Trump phenomenon. Did we want to be a part of the mainstream? The whole idea was that the mainstream is corrupt and wicked and evil and needs to be taken on and dismantled and destroyed. We don't want to be the mainstream. We want to represent a radical break from the mainstream. But now we're supposed to be the mainstream because the Democrats are the radicals. You have to also be radical to defeat the radicals. Do we not understand this? I'm telling you, I'm very worried about what comes next, because the Democrats are serious. They are communists. They're actually going to try to pull off a communist revolution in a real way. And I have so many people I've talked to about this that are like, they don't care, because they have this idea that like we already went through that we already are communists somehow. It's like, I don't know if y'all have ever looked into history and what a communist revolution really is, but it gets crazy. And they're only ever defeated by military action. So it's like our Republican leadership that talks so much about loving America and wanting to defeat the communists and the evils of socialism, they don't even have the balls to like arrest these people. Do you think they're going to be giving a green light to the army to crush the rebellion once it starts? Do you think they're actually going to take this seriously? The closer we get to the communist revolution, the harder it is to crush. We had every opportunity we could possibly want over the last year and a half, 2 years, to crush the left. We just haven't done it. We haven't wanted to. They pretend like they're doing it. They know what you want. They know what they should do. They declare Antifa a terrorist organization. Nothing happens. Nothing that mitigates Antifa's activity occurs at all. Antifa's not cowed. They're not scared. They're not running in fear. They're not shutting down their websites and chat rooms and running for the hills, trying to disguise themselves. They are as confident, as active as they ever were. So can we please get some actual action? Can we get something that tangibly affects things rather than empty rhetoric, more empty rhetoric? And literally everybody understands this at this point. This is Aaron Rodgers, former NFL quarterback. Or is he still a quarterback? I don't even know.
Yes, he's still in.
All right, thanks, Alex.
Look, it's me.
Alex is walking around. I didn't know you knew the football stats here.
Well, I like Aaron Rodgers.
Well, I like him too. I wasn't sure he was still playing.
So you ask a question. Yes, he's still there.
He's still there. All right, thank you. Alex is always there, just in case I need football trivia.
No, I was walking by. The AC was turned off in here.
Yeah.
Who did that?
It gets freezing.
Oh, did you turn it off?
No, it's fine.
Did you turn it off?
Well, yeah, but it's all right.
I thought you were getting too high.
It's fine. We'll turn off later.
No, you're the boss.
I'm having air conditioning issues here. No, but look, everybody gets it. Aaron Rodgers gets it. He expresses, I think, what a lot of Americans are feeling right now. Clip number 19. There's no Make America Great Again movement because the guy you elected hasn't done any of his campaign promises. Let's watch.
There's no MAGA movement. There's no Make America Great Again movement because the guy you elected hasn't done any of his campaign promises. And it just realizes you think something's going to actually change. You know, when Obama's president, you think that everybody's like, oh, there's going to be hope and change for a better world. Like, has anything in the black community gotten significantly better? Is anybody better off? Did the Affordable Care Act make a major difference in the world besides being an extra tax, you know, for the rich? Is healthcare that much better in this country? And then Trump's going to come in and drain the swamp and do something and nothing happens and nothing changes. Then they roll out that old bag of bones. That was a wild 4 years. And then you just bring back in the guy from the TV show who's going to, okay, now he's real. This is second administration. Now he's really going to change things. Politics is a total sham.
Remember, he had the influencers go there where they gave them the fake.
No, it's
the
all fake. Files.
They're holding them up and like that total thing. Never got it. Never got anything in there. And that was my biggest issue with it is they said first day in office, I'm going to release the Epstein files. And we've all been waiting for
this. This is a big psyop. The whole thing. Politics is a crazy psyop. If voting actually mattered, they wouldn't let you do it. That's the truth of it. I don't know if Mark Twain said that. Somebody, George Carlin probably would have said that for sure. But it's like George Carlin, who's way ahead of his time. He'd be incredible in this time. But he said, there's a big group.
That's the quote.
And you ain't in it.
Yep. You ain't a part of it.
You ain't a part of it. And that's the truth. Mm-hmm. So we should be skeptical of all of it, everything they say to us.
So what is he highlighting right there? What did the other guy highlight? All right, the other guy jumps in and goes, you know, that's what pissed me off, the fact that they pretended to reveal things about Epstein and didn't. The fact that they gave influencers empty binders and said, go wave those in front of the camera. Yeah, Aaron Rodgers says there is no MAGA movement in political rant. Well, it's about the lies. It's about the deception. It's all about the lack of truth. And the fact that it's obvious that Donald Trump's failure is not the result of forces beyond his control. It's not that Donald Trump is trying his hardest to deliver and it's just not working. Then you could be mad at the whole system. You could say we need even more reform. This is a sort of nihilism that's coming about because they see that the people who we put into office deliberately abandon their promises, deliberately fail to uphold what they said they intended to do, and that it's not supposed to matter, and that we're supposed to accept that and act like we just need to vote again. It's becoming clear what a giant psyop and farce this entire democratic process is. And I think he speaks for a lot of people that, again, are going to turn to anyone that they perceive to be capable of bringing about any sort of change. Whatever change looks like, they're going to embrace it. They're going to accept it. And we just heard from Brandon Gill, and we hear over and over from the Republicans. They're not even pitching being a change agent. They're not saying, actually, we're the mainstream. If you want things to continue as they are, vote for us. Well, nobody wants things to continue as they are. We voted for Trump to change things as they are. The DSA is becoming so radical because they're riding this wave of desire of change at all costs. So when Aaron Rodgers says there is no MAGA, what he means is that MAGA was a lie. And when they talk about the failure for Trump to put out the Epstein list, the guy didn't say that. You know, he's mad that pedophiles are getting away. He didn't say that he's mad that, you know, there's blackmail on Trump. He's mad that Trump said he would do something and then just didn't do it. It's the lies. It's the deception. It's the really relentless stream of promises that go willingly unfulfilled, willfully unfulfilled. Not because they can't, not because they try and fail, but because they deliberately tell you things that they know they're never going to do. They make promises they know they're never going to fulfill, and they know that they'll never pay a price for it. They know they don't have to. They know you'll vote for them anyway, because the other option is a communist revolution, and they know how bad that is. So, I mean, you're really dealing with like the most sort of brutal mafia tactics you could possibly imagine, of just putting us in an impossible position to where we either need to vote for the liars again, just confirming that the lies work and that it doesn't matter and they won't pay a price for deception and deceit and manipulation, or we allow ourselves to be taken over by the communists. And they're sitting there going, we can do whatever we want because we know that the other people have a gun to your head. We're not holding the gun to your head, but we are using the gun in their hands to get what we want from you. Brutal and ridiculous. And we'll get more into it on the other side. Again, J.D. Vance says some of the right things. We'll get into Donald Trump's $5,000 bonus idea, which is just straight up buying votes, which, like, it's like you wouldn't need to. We shouldn't be having this conversation. I'm not even, I mean, I it's not like I think that we're preserving some sacred trust between us and the government. I think that's been broken 1,000 times over. It's just the way you're supposed to do this is the way the Democrats do it. They don't come out and say, vote for us and we'll give you $5,000. But that is the promise. What they say is, we'll increase welfare. We'll get you help where you need it. We'll bring support to underdeveloped communities. It's all code words. But the way they do that is they create government processes to siphon money away from some fund and give it away to a certain population. And at the end of the day, what you end up with is a vast array, thousands upon thousands of left-wing organizations full of people whose very high salaries are paid so that they can continually aggravate and agitate and, you know, create activist moments to push the left-wing agenda. And it succeeds in pushing the left-wing agenda. It is a patronage network that they say in not so many words, but effectively, vote for me and we will fill your coffers. But they don't say we're just going to give you money. And by the way, they don't give money to everybody. They only give money to themselves. So it's this weird, almost like cargo cult mentality where Trump is like trying to do what the Democrats do, but doing it in a way that is incomprehensible and ineffective. You're supposed to reward your voters with sinecures and jobs and funding and, you know, NGO positions and positions in your cabinet. And you're supposed to actually create and generate a wave that ushers in more, you know, political movement behind you. This is just a cynical bribe that's not even going to work. We'll be right back.
Came out of nowhere, and overnight you're one of the biggest memes on X. How did this even happen?
I have absolutely no idea. I just smiled, and here we are.
And now I hear women are going crazy over you. You've got women chasing you everywhere you go.
Yeah, it's all new to me, but I'm loving it.
All right, I gotta ask, has Trump been in contact with you yet? Have you been invited to the White House?
Not officially, but I've already packed.
You packed?
Oh, yeah. Toothbrush, clean underwear, extra red hat, I'm ready.
What makes you think you're getting invited?
Look at me. We got these new t-shirts at the alexjonesstore.com. Now hit the store and get one now while supplies last. He's the best, the greatest. Look at my Trump. You're the best, Trump. Time to fight the fake news. Get him, Trump. You're the winner. Nobody better than you, Trump.
We are winning bigly. Food, gas, and rent are higher than ever, and Iran cannot have a nuke.
Yes!
Trump! Trump, I hear you calling. They're coming for you, Trump. The deep state. We love Trump. Keep America great. Trump forever. Woo! Hey, Trump, we love you. 4 more years.
So you think Trump can do no wrong, and you're for the war in Iran?
Alex, he is the best president ever! Trump, Trump, Trump! He's our champion! Yeah! Trump, USA! Woo!
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
This is the early phases or the beginning of, you know, I would say World War III, I get maybe World War IV, but this is the beginning of a world war. I mean, when you just look at how close these two fronts are, we're talking about Europe, we're talking about the Middle East, and then we're talking about basically everyone who's standing kind of against the American dominance. And again, China is who we're supposed to be worried about. I think most people agree that we should be worried about China, yet every move that we're taking from the time that we started supporting the Ukrainians and kicking Russia off the SWIFT system to starting the war in Iran with the Straits of Hormuz, the biggest benefactor has been China.
Since 2022, you in Europe, European taxpayers, because that's where the money comes from. Remember that it doesn't get created. It doesn't come out of nowhere. It comes from the taxpayer. That's you. Since 2022, Ukraine has been given 220 billion euros. Think about that. That's just the money that's been given to Ukraine. Forget about the massive impact, the billions in impact that it's had on economies. Forget about the trade between Ukraine and Russia. All the damage that's been done to the European Union, for example, the destruction of the Nord Stream pipelines, the blowing up of the biggest energy infrastructure project in history of European Union, destroyed, blown up.
European imports from China have increased by 45%. Over the past 5 years, while our exports to China are declining, our trade deficit with China now stands at nearly 1 billion euros per day, and it has risen another 10% since the beginning of this year.
Do you see why Americans have a problem sending billions of our tax dollars to Ukraine? That's Irina Mudra, who was until last week the deputy head of Zelensky's own presidential office, you know, being walked out in handcuffs on money laundering charges.
We just had to move our fleet away from the Pacific, which is actually our border.
Isn't it the first time pre-World War II we have no aircraft carrier over there?
14% of the Navy's fleet is now in the Caribbean, according to IEJ Media, including a buildup of 10,000 Marines and sailors, a dozen warships, a nuclear-powered fast attack submarine, a special operations mothership with drone capabilities, three guided missile destroyers, and the USS Iwo Jima, with an amphibious ready group on board. The USS Lake Erie, a guided missile cruiser with 32 Tomahawk missiles, was pulled from the Pacific and is now focusing on Venezuela, where the U.S. sent three B-52s escorted by stealth F-35s on a show of force mission.
And the Russians also realize that we are caught right now in this, you know, quagmire in the Middle East. We're having to move strategic assets away from other theaters, very important ones like the Pacific, to cover our bases in the Middle East. And so the Russians right now realize that our back is against the wall. We are running low on weapon systems, obviously. We got into the MOU. We got out of the MOU. We're stalled. So right now is a time where Russia is having their back put against the wall because of what Ukraine's doing with our assistance. And I'm not, you know, justifying or covering for Putin, but I don't think Americans understand Russian politics enough to know that Putin actually is relatively moderate within Russia. There are people that are criticizing him in his military and in his political establishment that are saying that this war in Ukraine's gone on for too long. Why aren't we being more serious? Why aren't we pushing forward? Why aren't we striking back? So I don't think the American people realize how close we are right now to a war that could, you know, change history, whether it goes nuclear or whether it just expands and Russia actually does start hitting some targets deeper into Ukraine or even some of our NATO partners. And then what happens after that? Then we're going to have to respond.
Today is the 1st of September, the day when World War II began. We need to make sure that there are no provocations globally that would instigate new global conflicts. I'm sure that our work will help us achieve that.
These countries are allegedly trying to settle the conflict and are trying to get their place at the negotiation table. We have been underscoring many times that any foreign contingents that are preventing the durable peace are unacceptable, and they will become legitimate targets. And the responsibility will be with those who has made the decision to further escalate the conflict.
We've heard Putin say this multiple times, that, you know, the president of the United States actually doesn't matter. It's the men in the dark suits who do matter. And so the Russians are very aware that we run NATO. And so everything that's being done to them by the Ukrainians with NATO weaponry, NATO targeting, they view it as us.
What makes a man a man? Testosterone. And today's men have 25% less of it than their fathers did. Does that make me 25% less of a man? Don't answer that. Answer this instead. FreedomRxHealth.com gets you evaluated by a licensed provider, real labs, and compounded testosterone built for you. More energy, more drive, more stamina, if you catch our meaning. Low testosterone after 35 is common and treatable. FreedomRx.com. Get your labs, get it back.
This is an emergency transmission from FEMA Region 6 in occupied North America.
There is a war. It's happening now. It will decide the fate of humanity. The time has come to choose sides. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. Share the links now at alexjoneslive.com.
Welcome back, folks. This is the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We're talking about the MAGA convention last night, the Republican midterm convention. Donald Trump is spinning this to be the best thing ever that ever happened, and everybody loved it. But of course, he's responding to the fact that there were a lot of empty seats in the stadium. And this whole thing just gives me such a depressed attitude. I mean, honestly, I just think back to some of the rallies we went to, you know, ahead of, well, I mean, even just like during Trump's first term, he would hold rallies and the energy was insane and the crowds were unbelievable. And it was just, it's just like remembering back over the 10 years, not just of the enthusiasm and the energy that swirled around Trump, but then in addition to that, or sort of like, I don't know, countervailing that, you have the attacks that people suffered and were willing to suffer and understood that they would suffer and did it anyway. And for just all of that, like, it's just, you just think about the squandering. What has this opportunity, 10 years of this, and we basically have nothing to show for it. We're worse off than we were in 2016, even when it comes to Donald Trump's primary pillar, his ultimate stance of build the wall and deport the illegal immigrants. We are significantly worse off by tens of millions than we were in 2016. So I'm not sitting here trying to, you know, downplay something that succeeded. I'm just in awe. I'm shocked at what a outrageous failure the Trump administration has turned out to be. And there are absolutely no signs of it turning around in any way. So what Trump said about the convention, the Republican midterm convention last night in Dallas was a major sold-out hit, far bigger, better, and more important than anyone thought possible. It was really something, streaming all over the place in really big numbers, despite going up against the NFL. The overall numbers beat the NFL. The arena, which was really nice, beat its own attendance records. The place was packed. There were thousands of people outside who couldn't get in. Screens were provided. I guess people love Trump politics. I'll be there again tonight to close out the show. Exciting stuff. Make America great again. obviously it's just pathetic coping is what we call coping at a presidential level. And we can go to dot cam here. You can see just a few, an incomplete crowd at the first ever Republican rally convention, with you just see rows and rows and rows of empty seats. And even, you know, during the speeches, when it should be a packed house, as Alex Jones notes, more concerning is the number of empty seats in the second and third level of Trump's convention. They're almost completely empty. Trump's powers to rally the American people are a shadow of their former strength. You've got this entire top row of seats, thousands of seats, unfilled, even though they were giving away free tickets to this event to anybody who could make it. Meanwhile, the left is apparently gathering in protest outside of the event hall, and they're, you know, dressed as if they're going to war and the police are being deployed to fight them back. Nick Sartor is reporting on it, posting videos. Dallas riot police are rolling in heavy to take on leftist rioters who are blocking roads outside the RNC. These losers are about to learn the hard way this BS will not be tolerated in Texas. I have the feeling it's going to be tolerated. I have the feeling these people are going to block roads and are going to assault Trump supporters. And I have the feeling none of them are going to go to jail. None of them are going to be arrested. I have a feeling there's not going to be a giant cavalry charge, you know, forcing them back. There are some of the guys dressed in, you know, military fatigues. Of course, Texas is an open carry state, so you often see leftists, you know, carrying guns to these types of events. And you just, I mean, I got to be honest, there's a lot of people. There's a lot of people in Dallas coming out to protest this sort of meaningless, symbolic midterm convention. Obviously, it's nothing like the Black Lives Matter riots, but it's, you know, pretty insane. Pretty insane that our country is still just conquered by these people. And they still just act like they're in charge, and for all intents and purposes, they are. And they're scenes of conflict taking place where, you know, the left wing is attacking right wingers. Nothing's being done about it. So, you know, it's just at a certain point, you just need to, we just need to understand fully. We really need to comprehend that, like, what Trump represented was never real. Never actually happened. Yeah, Grindr crashes in Dallas after huge surge in activity at the Republican convention. Not a surprise. There's a full-on standoff between Dallas police and leftist rioters taking over the streets outside the RNC. DPD has completely blocked their march. Start rounding them up, Nick Sartor says. They're not going to be rounded up, because what they're doing right now is a peaceful protest, which is legal. And so it's going to be allowed. The problem is that these very same people almost certainly participated 2 years ago in the nationwide activist trend of burning Tesla dealerships to the ground. You know, if you don't go after them for the actual crimes they commit, you can't go after them for peacefully protesting. They wouldn't be there to peacefully protest if they were in jail for the terroristic activities they almost certainly were involved in at some point or another. If we would actually go after these people in a lawful and legal and effective way, we wouldn't have to worry about the police, you know, rounding them up for peacefully protesting. And I don't know the last time, I can't think of the last time I actually saw like a sizable right-wing protest in America. Must have been January 6th, right? That was basically the end of that for us. The left still gets to march around as much as they want and say whatever they want and attack whoever they want, as they've been allowed to since 2016. So at a certain point, we just got to recognize that nobody is coming to save us at all. Democrats play up Trump investigations, Epstein files during GOP convention in Dallas. The countermessaging includes speaking to Texas voters about affordability issues and Democratic efforts to regain control of the House. Yeah, and basically all the leftists understand how to manipulate people and are just straight up rejecting everything they believed up until the current race began. And people are going to fall for it because they know how to sound reasonable. And the left, I mean, it is kind of shocking how polar opposite the left and the right are in this country in terms of the left wing moderates its language during an election and then governs like an extremist. The Republicans are the exact opposite. They come out pounding their chest and making insane promises and swearing that they'll do everything their voters want. They get into office. They do absolutely nothing. Meanwhile, the left goes out and says, no, we don't believe in transgender surgery for kids, and we don't even want trans people in sports. You know, we don't want any of that stuff. And then they get into office and they govern like Chairman frickin' Mao. Can we just have some honesty? Can we have some upfrontness one way or the other? Or could the Republicans take just some modicum of the Democrat strategy and turn it to the correct viewpoints and the correct policies and the right decisions? Again, the frustrating part that is just constantly reasserted is the fact that we could do anything that we want. The Republican Party, when they have the power, they could do it because they do it when it's not for the benefit of the American people. It's a lot less popular to have the Iran war kick off than it would be to do deportations, but for some reason, deportations have to grind to a halt because of the outrage. The Iran war continues unabated, and now we're being told it will continue until Trump is out of office. Talking about going to 2029 with the Iran war. So they wanted to deport everybody. They could. It would not be hard. They just don't want to. Let's go to clip 18 here. This is Donald Trump. This is the big headline from yesterday that's causing a bunch of strife and dissension within the Republican ranks. But, I mean, you know, I guess we can take solace in the fact that it's probably never going to happen. Like, even if he promises it, it's, you know, probably just never going to happen anyway. So, you know, we don't have the money for it. Where would the money even come from? And this is all just retarded. Let's go to clip number 18. Here's President Trump saying that we're going to bribe everybody to vote for us. Great. Great. I love living in a democracy. Let's watch.
If the Republicans win, if you win, we might not win. The reason the Democrats can't do that is because they don't do tariffs. They don't take in money. All they know is poverty and how to ruin our country. But we're making a fortune. So if the Republicans win, you win with us and you get $5,000. It will be called the Trump dividend. We'll call it the Trump dividend. Congratulations.
So we didn't get the Doge dividend. We didn't get the tariff dividend, but we'll get the Trump dividend. And sure, it may have cost us $500 billion to do the stimulus checks during COVID. Those were only $1,200. So this would be more than double that. So we're looking at like a $1 trillion outlay here. And I guess everybody will get it, not just Trump supporters. So that's kind of cool. You can vote for a Democrat and either the Democrat wins and you're going to get the welfare and subsidies that they promise you, or the Republicans win and you get $5,000 anyway. So it's not even really incentive to vote for Trump. It's just an extra bonus for his enemies if he wins, which is great. It's wonderful. It's just, I mean, the desperation, the pathetic small attempt at just a straight up cash bribe for votes. It's kind of just humiliating. I mean, to me, it's just kind of humiliating. It's really an admission of failure. You should not have to bribe the American people with $5,000. You should have achieved things and then people would give you their vote for free. You could have actually saved Americans $5,000 by not going to war with Iran and causing inflation to continue to skyrocket and cause us to pay $20, $30, $40 or more every time we go to fill our gas tanks. You know, you could have just saved us $5,000 by not committing our country to an utterly asinine and ridiculous war in the Middle East for the sake of Israel, you wouldn't have to bribe anybody. You could expel all of the migrants and then wages might rise. You could expel all the migrants and then housing might become cheaper. You could actually just do what you're supposed to do and then none of this would be an issue. You could have let Doge continue to run and not only disempower, disenfranchise, and bankrupt the leftist activist networks that are driving the push to socialism, but you could have actually diverted that money into the coffers of true American patriot organizations and actually use the Democrat strategy effectively, not just as a blatant and in-your-face bribe for $5,000. And I really don't know anybody who's in favor of this. I've been looking around. I don't see anybody in favor of it. And the messaging, obviously, is ridiculous. Don't vote for the left. They want socialism and communism. Vote for us, and the government will give you free money. Trump's $5,000 pledge and its bond market revolt show it's a voter bribe costing every American $8,000. What do you think? What do you think, Alex?
Owen always loved this.
When you come in?
Now, the truth is, we're in this little bitty studio, and I forgot my electrolyte drink. So I can't, you're laughing.
We're sort of walking all over each other around here.
That's okay. But hey, big announcement soon. Now, we were going to do it next week, but they asked me not to do it for 2 weeks. But am I hyping things up? The big announcements are big?
They're pretty big. I mean, I don't know what they are either, so.
Well, you already know. Well, there's, you
well
know,
I'm excited to find out.
It's bigger than the court victory. And well, you know one of the announcements.
Yeah.
And that's pretty big.
That's pretty big.
You're kind of playing it down. Okay, it's not big.
We got to build it up.
No. I mean, is it not big? You don't think that's a big deal?
I think it's a big deal, but I think we need to make it a big deal.
Yeah, people take stuff for so granted, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was just trying to get my luxury right.
You were trying to sneak in. All right. I thought maybe you had something to say about the $5,000. I mean, everything that comes out of Trump now, I'm just like, I just got to roll my eyes. That's a very cool knife.
Yeah, but look at that. We need
to sell this knife. I know. Trying to get it's it like for, the coolest thing ever.
Really good stilettos are like $400. They legalized them 6 years ago nationally. $400. So I finally found a company. We can get them for like $30 and sell them for like $50 and still make money. So I'm trying to make the deal because this is actually a high quality knife. I finally found a cheap stiletto that's quality.
It's really nice.
Look at that. And,
yeah. I mean, all of our knives are nice, but this one.
Well, you got to defend yourself. We don't want stuff that's too expensive because if we have to buy it at $200, we got to make some money. We're going to sell for $300. So I finally found some inexpensive knives that are quality. That the steel tested and looked at by experts. This looks like it's going to be a game changer.
Well, if the Republicans win, everybody'll have an extra $5,000 to spend.
Yeah,
so,
by the way, I didn't come in here. No, I wasn't actually. I was watching earlier.
You were just trying to sneak in
on the air at Rogers. I was trying to get my drink, and I guess you're so used to me interrupting that you thought that's what I was saying. But we had a whole thing of these downstairs. Somebody stole my electrolyte drink. So we're going to find out who that is. What's the one last one? But I think Aaron Rodgers, I did watch that part of the show, he perfectly crystallized everything that's happening.
Yeah.
He's a great guy, a big fan of the show, and we were a fan of him. We have not got him on the show yet. I never even tried to get his number, tried to get him on, but I always hear, he always says nice things on Rogan about us and everything. We want Aaron Rodgers, we want you on.
Aaron Rodgers. If anybody knows Aaron Rodgers, reach out.
No, but you're right. People probably won't even care if we got InfoWars back. They probably wouldn't even. It's like, you know, we've been in this so long. It's like, yeah.
No, they forget. I mean, they forget what we've
been
through.
They probably say, oh, it's staged.
Yeah, naturally. Yeah, obviously.
Well, you've been here for 9 years. That ain't staged.
Literally nothing is staged, and it's crazier than we even let on,
like,
honestly.
I came in here to get an electrolyte drink, and it turns into a whole segment.
No, it's all, well.
No, but here's my deal. And here's the deal. Harrison, you know I've never told you what to say or do. I send you clips and say, hey, this is big. You send me clips, right?
That's true.
And it's a weird thing when I actually ask for something, I don't get it. Like two-front war 2.0 or eight-front war 2.0.
I'm working on it.
So easy. Made the other one in one day. Won't do it because I asked for it. So the truth is people do the opposite. I don't want eight-front war 2.0, okay? You are ordered not to have that out by next week.
Hey, look, the first one was so successful. I'm taking my time with this.
No, you're overdoing it because you have so much evidence. Make that part three.
That's true.
So the truth is I get nothing I want to control these people. I think Harrison has credibility. I like him overall. My problem is they go, only 90% Israel, and then I do it worse than he is. So it's like I get mad because at the same time there are other issues, but then Israel's so outrageous, which they do on purpose.
Yes,
you know they bait her by like a red.
Yeah,
red,
of course,
tape,
of
right?
course, yeah, yeah.
That's why this MAGA-tard thing is such an important video because they perfectly encapsulate. No, there's a bigger game here.
Yeah,
and I want to just get myself included because Israel pisses me off to no end with all their lawfare and the rest of it. Yeah, we know it's you. At a certain point, you've got to be Christ-like in that there's a time to live, a time to die, a time to fight, a time to reap, a time to sow. You got to be more sophisticated, is all I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is, even if you don't want to talk about it, everything else we talk about comes back to that. So you talk about the Iran war, you're going to be talking about Israel. We're talking about Charlie Kirk, you got to talk about Israel. It's like it's constantly in our ken.
Well, I see all these guys, and I'm not a warfare expert, though I actually am a wide spectrum expert in a lot of that. Actually, I'm an expert, but the point is that I didn't go to the official schools of it. Everybody wants a knife that's one-sided for fighting or defense. Rule 101, you want double-edged dagger, razor sharp for insert to get into the organs if you've got to defend yourself. So, number one, do you have a weapon that can be instantly deployed? Number two, is it double-edged? Is it thin? Is it ready to go in so that with limited force you get in? Or also slashing, because if someone's coming at you, these stupid knife fighting moves are like this. No, real knife fighting is someone trying to come at you, just slash because you've got full power. Any fingers coming at you, anything's cut off. So, see.
It's a very cool knife.
Well, finally.
We got to get one.
I've been working on this for years. And I'll tell the audience that, because it's actually high quality, we're trying to get that for you folks, okay? We're working on it. This son of a bitch, we get it for like $10. It's aluminum, it's real stainless steel, and I've tested it out, stabbing stuff. Finally found a place. Of course, by the time we try to order 10,000, it'll shut down or something, but we finally, this is the holy grail right here. Because they sell knives like this at Cabela's, for $400 or another brand.
It's a really nice
Vince
knife.
Bench made and all that.
I was picking it up yesterday and just playing around with it. You can feel. I mean, that's a serious.
Yeah, this is good. Don't you love I'm trying to sell a product we don't have yet?
I know. What are we doing?
This is research and development here.
We've got real knives. We sell real knives, too. And I use them. Alex Jones threatens to cut off finger. And he'll do it with one of the fine knives you can get.
Shot. It's like Japanese when they're apologizing.
Hold on.
Overhead shot. Come on, guys.
You got to find it. You got to find
right
it.
Here. If I could cut my finger off to defeat the glove. You?
Yeah, absolutely.
You got the samurai swords in your walls.
Yeah.
Toenail or something.
Right Commit Harry Carey.
Anyways, seppuku. Anyways, the point is, would you do... Oh, yeah, look at that right there. Who would
That's
do
a
that
sharp knife.
Bloodletting. I'm not a masochist. I'm not into self-harm. But I'm saying, oh, look at that ninja lord power. All right, I'm getting out of here. Harrison, stop dragging me in here.
I'm sorry. He was trying to sneak in with his drink. I called him out.
You just let that blade sit right there with you. Just try the action for yourself.
I know. No, this thing is amazing.
I've looked at hundreds of stilettos since they legalized them. That damn thing is like, I think we can get it for like $9 or like $10,000. Below that, it's like $15. Try to buy one, it's like $20. We can sell that for like
awesome.
$19.95 or $30 or whatever. Make a good profit. Everybody's going to want this because this is finally, look at that.
No, it's very cool.
I've stabbed drywall, dummies, a bunch of stuff with this one. And I've like hit it up against walls and stuff. Doesn't break. Other ones I got, they're cheap. They break. This is actually a good company. But who knows it'll be around anymore, you know?
All right. Well, until then, folks, you can go to thealexjonesstore.com for all your knife needs.
There are a few good knives in there, and they're still.
There are some really good knives, yeah. There's some really,
but
really awesome.
Stiletto's the way to go. It's not a switchblade. See, people ask me. I was flying back from Hawaii and I had one of these, and they called me in. They said this is illegal. They said, "Oh, actually, sir, they passed the federal law." Another good thing Trump did. He basically decriminalized suppressors are easier to get, and brass knuckles are legal. Who cares? Criminals grab them anyways. Skull crushers.
Might as well have them too.
Stilettos. Switchblades are all legal.
All right, well, we got to go to commercial break, and you got to make your exit here. But
oh my God, the knives are back!
But look at these knives! Look at these incredible knives! They are awesome. I carry around one of these knives every single day, folks. You can too. TheAlexJonesStore.com.
Be me make a huge announcement that has been 3 years being prepared. And that is a giant, fantastic, full online pharmacy with the best doctors and nurses, the best backbone, the best people. I mean, we've got the heads of the different national associations on the board of this. It's not my company. It's the folks we've been working with that are going to build the whole new network and all the new systems. So when you get a great deal on your online pharmacy, they got everything under the sun with the very best service and the very best quality, no matter where you are. Then the funds go into building a new army in the info war that will dwarf our past activity. A true 360 win. Announcing freedomrxhealth.com. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this is incredible. The prices are super low. It's all the highest quality, and it's everything. And obviously, with all the stuff we've been embroiled in the last few years, fighting the deep state info wars, it didn't launch because they would just try to blow it up on the ground. But now it's ready. Everything is at FreedomRx, one word, FreedomRxHealth.com. But we're focusing today on several of the big areas that I want to recommend to you. And it's so easy, and it's so quick. And it's literally, like, on average, 30% of what you get at a local doctor's office. And the service is so much better. Something Trump did good legalizing telemedicine in his first administration. The very best testosterone therapy and all the other hormonal therapy, energy, muscle, libido, mood. All the good peptides, the BPC-157, NAD, all of them. Every single one of them. And what I've seen with professional football players I know and friends and doctors and scientists and all the stuff that's going on, it is incredible. They've got every single one with the lowest prices. Sexual health, PT-141. Woo, look out. Talk about the true aphrodisiac. Oxytocin protocols for men and women, longevity, recovery, cognitive support. They got everything. And everything is cash, no insurance. Medication shipped directly to the patient door in discreet packages. All protocols are physician prescribed through a licensed telehealth physician network. It's all there. There's only one rule up front. Patients cannot call in to sign up. It has to all be done through the portal, so it follows all the laws. Very easy to do. All new patients must go through the portal at freedomrxhealth.com. This protects the patient, the physician, and the platform legally. Once onboarded, patients can reach support by phone or by mail, but sign up is entirely online so that all the laws are followed. It's so simple. Do it in a few minutes. HIPAA compliant. Your health information is 100% protected. Patient goes to freedomrxhealth.com. Patient selects the protocol and completes the intake. Patient does the labs at a local, either recommended or blood testing facility of your choice. For physician review and consultation, prescription written, medication ships to the patient's door. 6 easy steps. When you go to FreedomRx, you have to understand that it's about preserving health and upholding values. Your health, your business, nobody else's. Your health, your business, nobody else's. FreedomRx, preserving health, upholding values. The folks that own this are patriots. They first came to me 4 years ago wanting to do this. I agreed 3. They had it built about a year ago. They kept adding to it, but going through all the stuff we went through, I wanted to wait until we had a new operation to launch it with this incredible sponsor. Go now to freedomrxhealth.com. Preserving health, upholding values, your health, your business, nobody else's, the very best quality, the total selection of everything, the best telemedicine, so easy, the ball's in your court. Go now to freedomrxhealth.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
All right, welcome back, folks. Try to get this train back on the rails here. I'm going to be opening up the phone lines for your calls in the third hour. We'll probably do new callers only. At least at the start. We got a problem because some of you guys are so quick at calling in. If I don't do first time callers, it's like the same 5 names. And I love you guys. They're all really amazing callers. We got to give the other people an opportunity. So we'll do that in the third hour. Still a lot more to talk about in this segment. And I do want to tell you, we do have fantastic knives on sale at thealexjonesstore.com. in addition to our incredible supplements. And of course, it keeps us on the air and in the fight and preparing to make some very big announcements that we hinted at a little bit earlier. Maybe you can read between the lines there to see what's coming, but it's some very exciting stuff. And of course, you go to thealexjonesstore.com to support us. And I'm just thinking about the oddity that has occurred, the strangeness that I've encountered. You know, Alex and I are both going to be going to this conference, the Christ is King America After Trump conference in November. And ever since Alex was announced as a speaker, I've seen a lot of people criticizing him because they have a very warped view of who Alex Jones is. And, you know, they'll post a clip of Alex talking about sort of, getting knowledge from, I don't even know how to explain it. He'll say something like, I spoke to the watchers or something, a phrase that just sort of encapsulates what Alex does, which is just to ponder on this stuff and come up with a conclusion. Same thing. Anybody that, you know, wants to be in this space and not just be repeating talking points has to do. And all this is to say, a lot of people out there, they may be great Christians. They may be very seemingly, they may think they're tuned in spiritually to the higher realm and, you know, what's going on. Until you experience the attacks that we've experienced, until you really are in the depth of what can only be described as like demonic influence swirling around you, and you just, you look at politics and half the time the things that we're talking about, it's just inexplicable. And we're like, how could this decision be made? But then to know it from inside, from to be like inside something and to hear the way it's reported, that's totally different. And you got to realize, like for the last 10 years at least, all of us here, but Alex especially, have been in the midst of war, of spiritual warfare, physical warfare, monetary warfare, legal warfare. And you come to an understanding of things if you're on the right track, if you don't give up, if you don't give in, if you don't surrender or sell out and maintain your path and maintain your credibility and maintain your legitimacy and resist the temptation. I mean, people hear the story about Jesus being offered the world by the devil and resisting it. Have any of them actually been in that position? Have any of them ever been told, join us and you'll get everything that you want? Because Alex has actually been in that position. He's not Jesus or anything. But to have people say, hey, all of these problems can go away. All we need is for your nod. Like the Persian emissary in 300. Hey, just a little bit of salt, a little bit of dirt, just a symbol of your submission. That's all we need, and the world will be yours. Not only will resistance bring about conflict and strife for you, but giving in will be rewarded greatly. Have you ever actually been presented that option? Have you ever actually been told by somebody with the power to deliver incredible wealth, incredible fame, incredible prestige? And would you have the fortitude or the spirituality to reject that? So, you know, I know some people think we talk about it a lot, what's happened with InfoWars and what we've been through. But it's almost impossible to express what it's actually been like from the inside and the level of true, like, spiritual groundedness you need, spiritual certainty you need to persist and continue when you know it's going to be hard, when you know you're almost certainly going to lose, when you know that there's an escape hatch you could take at any point. All you have to do is sell your soul. All you have to do is sign on the dotted line and all of this strife will go away. All of these troubles will vanish and you will be uplifted and rewarded. And to reject that because you know it's wrong, because you have something that you value higher than money or higher than, you know, earthly power. You know, a lot of people talk really big about being in spiritual war and then they encounter somebody who's actually a champion in spiritual war, who's actually been through this, you know, World War I level trench warfare, just grinding spiritual conflict. And they see somebody like Alex Jones and they want to write him off because he's honest about who he is. In a sector, the right-wing sector, that is, to be honest, completely filled with frauds. I mean, almost to the brim, right? There's a few of us out there that are actually trying to tell the truth, that are actually sincere about what we represent in our personal lives, as well as public. I can probably count on one hand the number of people that I really think are sincere like that. And I would be one of them, and Alex Jones would be another. And then I'd be hard-pressed to find the other three. But it's just shocking to me that so much resistance has come from the quote-unquote Christian right. Way more opposition, way more outrage than I've seen from the leftists at all. I've barely seen leftists or liberals, you know, talk about this or bring it up. It's people on the supposed right wing who are supposedly Christian, who are supposedly engaged in spiritual warfare that can't seem to recognize what spiritual warfare actually looks like in this world, how it actually manifests. That you, when you think of spiritual warfare, you just think of like spirits flying around and like, oh, you're going to have, you know, bad thoughts that you're going to have to overcome. And it's like, that's not what it's like. Spiritual warfare in this realm is being sued into oblivion, is having things stolen from you and having the powers that be, the authorities empowered specifically to deal with the problem that's affecting you, refuse to even take your case. It's having the most outrageous lies told about you and then having to watch in real time as over the years, people who once knew the truth firsthand start to actually believe the lie. The more it's repeated, the more people believe it. And some people obviously are just cynical. They don't actually believe anything and they're just going with any which way the wind blows. Thinking about Laura Loomer, right? Laura Loomer used to know what happened to Alex Jones. She understood that everything that had happened to Alex Jones was not legitimate, was not a correct functioning of our legal system. And all of a sudden she wants to be enemies with Alex, so she's saying that actually he deserved it, just like Trump did. That's what spiritual warfare looks like. It looks like your friends turning on you when they used to know the truth and nothing has developed that would change their mind other than, you know, their own persuasion. And then to have people believe that. And then to have people point to people that were your friends and say, well, this person was your friend and now they've turned against you. So that kind of proves that your enemies must be right. The whole time knowing that all you're doing is telling the truth. All you're doing is trying your best to, you know, express the American Christian worldview on the biggest stage possible. And just to be constantly beset with the most dishonest, the most deceitful, the most underhanded, manipulative attacks, and then to watch your very allies turn on you over it. That's what spiritual warfare looks like. A lot of these people have no idea what that would be like and could not handle it if it affected them to even a tenth of the degree that it affects us. So if you want to support real actual spiritual warriors who have actually been battling the dark in so many different forms. I mean, my God, it's been crazy. It's been from the doxing to the threats to the lawsuits to the lies to the media manipulation to the bizarre effect of just repeating a lie over and over and over to where people who know with their own eyes, they know it's not true. They will still start to believe it. You see the power of this stuff, and then you see the way that people who have endured this, people who have lived through this, people who have maintained their spiritual consistency throughout get demonized and get basically called the opposite of what they are by a bunch of people who have never been through anything and have never stood up to anything or stood up for anything. It's just pathetic. It really is. And it's shocking seeing people who think that they're engaged in spiritual warfare. You see the horns come out and you see them turn on you, not even realizing what they're doing. It's again, like they're motivated by some extrasensory force. We know what it's like to actually be in spiritual warfare, which is why when you see things like Donald Trump betraying his base and not fulfilling any of his promises and willing to go along with not just the Iran war, but the building of the digital panopticon. You go, here's a guy who was not prepared for spiritual warfare. Here's a guy whose spirit was inadequate to the challenge. Because that's all it is at the end of the day is, do you persist? Can you persist through the attacks? Can you continue to drive for your goal when everybody around you is trying to divert you or trying to stop you or trying to slow you down? Donald Trump, unfortunately, seems like he reached the end of his rope sometime around 2024 and just threw in the towel and made a deal and said, look, I'll sign on the dotted line. I'll shake the devil's hand. Whatever I need to give you in order to stop the attacks, I'll do it. When in reality, everything needs to be doubled down on. And this is something that I feel like the right wing needs to get a handle on as well. For example, there's a statue being unveiled today in New York City of Charlie Kirk. And, well, I think that's a wonderful thing, and I think there should be statues of him all over the place. And I'm in favor of that. You know the left is going to just vandalize it and attack it and probably, you know, pour red paint on it. So the right thing to do in this situation is not to bend the knee and bow to the left and bow to the terrorism and remove the statue. The moral thing to do is to put the statue up, put a security camera on it, and charge anybody that messes with it with the highest possible charge you can get on them. And, you know, the way these things work, you can take what would be a minor misdemeanor and you can upcharge it, because what that misdemeanor represents is actually something much greater. You can take things that aren't even crimes and transmogrify them into felonies by interpreting the wording of the law a particular way or writing a new law to assign certain behavior as worse than others. Think about the FACE Act. There is nothing illegal, ostensibly, objectively, about standing outside of an abortion clinic. How could that be illegal? But you take the standing outside of the abortion clinic and you say that's an attempt to intimidate. Now you're talking about somebody who's using intimidation to deprive somebody of their rights. Well, now the act of standing outside of an abortion clinic, which is not a crime, becomes a felony crime with the FACE Act. So this is the way that we need to be operating. This is the way we all need to be operating. You put up the Charlie Kirk statue, and then you have a law that says any attempt to deface or destroy or vandalize this statue will be treated as an attempt of political intimidation, and you will be charged not just with vandalism, but with vandalism with the intent to cause fear. It's a terrorism enhancement, and you could go away for 20 years. And then you put up the statue, and the first person that touches it, you throw into the jail for 20 years. And you make it public, and you say, we're going to do it to the next person, too. And then what are they going to say? This is unfair because I just had to attack the statue. You're not allowed to throw me in prison because I just really, really wanted to do it. Like, this is just what you need to do. In the same way, you have deportation attempts. And anybody who tries to get in the way, you just charge them with interfering in a law enforcement matter. If somebody that's a friend of mine texts me about a crime they committed, and then I delete that text message, so when later I'm subpoenaed and I don't have the text message, and I deliberately deleted it because I didn't want them to find, you know, my friend's confession, then I can be charged because I've... Now, is it a crime to delete your own message? No, obviously not. But in a certain context, yes, because it's concealing evidence. So you're letting somebody get away with a crime. So in the same way, if a police officer goes to arrest a murder suspect and you drive your car into them to help the murder suspect get away, you are now an accessory to the murder and you need to be charged with that. So it's just like all of this stuff, it's like we're relying on the left's goodwill. And we're just going, like, we'll put up the statue and we'll be like, now it would be really bad of you to deface this. But they don't care. They're going to deface it. They're going to destroy it because they don't actually pay a price. It's all about just using the power of the government in the way that it's intended to be used for the benefit of the regular American people. And it needs to be used to punish our enemies for all of the crimes that they commit. It's really just infinitely simple. Again, the only question is, why are the people who we put in power unwilling to do it? Because there are a couple options. There are only a few options as to why Republicans won't do what they promise and won't use the power of the government to actually achieve the ends desired by their constituency. One option is they are stupid and don't know what we want. But that can't possibly be true because they pretend to do what we want. They say promises about what we want. They declare Antifa a domestic terrorist organization like we want. Then they just don't do it. So you can't say they don't know what we want. They do know because they tell us what they're going to do. Another option would be they're trying to do it, but the other side is just too powerful and stopping them from doing it. That's also manifestly, obviously, observably untrue. Because when they want to do something, they do it. And nobody can stop them. I mean, right now, I've got a story. The you know, most number of denaturalizations ever is occurring right now. Only it's occurring on the basis almost exclusively of their support for Palestine. So it can be done, and they could do it for anti-American behavior, anti-American activity, communist associations, but they're not. So you can't say they don't know. You can't say that they're trying and failing. The only thing that's left is that they just don't care, don't want to. That's it. It's just like have different priorities. Know what they need to say, so they say it to trick you. No, they could do it, which is why they don't really try. They want it to persist as it is. And I've said this many, many times. I have practically every day, it seems like. I have to invoke the specter of things like South Africa in an effort to get people to understand where we're headed, where we're going, the trajectory that we're on, and the fact that it's not speculation. We've seen this before. We know how this ends. The situation in South Africa is worse than anybody maybe understands. And this should give you a little preview as to how long degradation can go on. How long the tail of this civilization can be as we continue step by step, like every day, another piece of evidence of our decline is presented as we continue to decline and diminish and just get worse day over day. I don't know if there is a floor to this. I don't know if there's some point you can get to where everybody wakes up and goes, okay, we got to reverse things. It doesn't happen. And you can look at South Africa where they say this from commonsense.co.za. The government is running out of taxpayers. South Africa has fewer than 1 million serious taxpayers left. Each one of those taxpayers supports 35 social grant recipients. So for every one person making a positive contribution to the South African government, 35 people are subsisting entirely off that person's contribution. 35 people to every one taxpayer. Do you understand? Like, as bad as America is right now, it can get so, so much worse. Year-on-year growth in the second quarter of 2026 came at a 0.9% yesterday, down from 1.9% in the first quarter. Of the many implications of South Africa's low growth rate, one of the least mentions is the effect on stunting the growth of the tax base and the extent to which this gives South Africa's roughly 1 million serious personal income taxpayers great leverage over the government. South Africa has a population of around 63 million people, 1 million of them pay taxes. 63 million people, 1 million pay taxes. Around 7.1 million or 11% earn enough to fall above the personal income tax threshold, meaning that they earn enough to register to pay personal income tax. There are only around 750,000 people earning more than 750,000, whatever their money is, South African dollars a year, equivalent to roughly 1.2% of South Africa's population. And these contribute approximately 56.7% of all personal income tax collected in South Africa. Okay, so 1% of the population pays for like 50% of the taxes. How important is personal income tax to total government revenue? It contributes 39.7%, corporate tax contributes 17.1%, and VAT contributes 24.5%, with the balance made up by various levies and the like. But the people in that top $750,000 bracket are chiefly the same people who run the major companies and pay corporate tax and therefore drive the economic activity that makes VAT and levy collection possible. And it is therefore perfectly correct to say that under 1 million people are responsible for around 70% of all government revenue. And so, yeah, you can see by this chart, the total population is 63 million. There are about 26 million on social grants. Only 16 million are employed, but only 7 million actually make enough to pay personal income tax. Less than a million people, around two-thirds of a million people, earn over $750,000, meaning that they're the vast majority of the income taxpayers. The government treats that top taxpayer group with contempt on both the substantive and petty scale. On the substantive scale, it dictates to them who they might employ or where they might invest, threatens to expropriate that investment, and threatens to nationalize their health care. On a petty scale, as the Democrat Alliance is now doing, it wants them to tell them how many dogs they're allowed to keep and tax them on any surplus. On the other end of society, around 26 million South Africans, or 45% of the population, receive some form of social grant. This means there are roughly four social grant recipients for every one person earning enough to fall above the personal income tax threshold. For every one person earning more than $750,000 a year, there are approximately 77 other South Africans, 21 employed South Africans, and 35 social grant recipients. And that direct social grant number is just the start of the broader welfare system that the fewer than 1 million people support. To grants must be added free state or subsidized state health care, free or subsidized school education, free or subsidized university education, which serves as welfare for a large number of people in their late teens and early 20s, the payment of large numbers of unnecessary civil service salaries, which serve as middle class welfare, and the financing of black economic empowerment, which serves as welfare for South Africa's class of politically connected oligarchs. It is a very large upside-down pyramid balancing on a very small point. That point will not get much bigger in a very low-growth environment that remains as hostile to investment and entrepreneurship as South Africa's broader policy environment is, but the very low rate of economic growth will make demands on the state to grow even larger without that revenue base to meet them. The effect can only be that public frustration with the government increases and that voters look to all manner of alternative political solutions, more radical parties, and ultimately enclaves. So, like, do you understand how bad it can get? Do you understand that they worked out the process that is effective? They employed it in South Africa. We're seeing the results of that now. It will continue, I guess, unabated. I guess it's only going to get worse. The number of people actually paying taxes is only going to decrease, while the number of people subsidized by those tax dollars is only going to increase. There's no hint of a turnaround anytime in the very near future, because in order to achieve that, you would have to abandon the entire mindset that the South Africa Rainbow Coalition was established on in the 80s. So until you're ready to acknowledge the fact that this entire system predicated on so-called racial equality is a giant scam to systematically disempower the productive members of society to reward the least productive, till you're willing to do that, nothing is going to change. And this is us in the very near future if we don't change our path first.
Yo, Alex! Hey, slow down! I'm coming with you!
Hey, it's good to see you, Rocky.
Yo, you want to keep going the distance? Get over to the alexjonesstore.com and get yourself some of this methylene blue.
Look, Let's go, Alex! Yeah! Let's go, Alex!
I broke you, Stinko!
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
All right, Bill, welcome back, folks. We're going to take your phone calls this hour, but I'm going to go to a few videos first. In fact, let's go ahead and go to clip number 6. I believe this is from Brett Weinstein's podcast. This is about the lingering effects of COVID and the changes that were made during COVID, justified by COVID. They're still having tangible and negative effects here in the States. Let's go to clip number 6 here. Claims about the Model Emergency Health Powers Act and its role in expanding state authority before COVID. Let's watch.
Shortly after the Patriot Act was introduced and signed, there was something called the Model State Emergency Health Powers Act legislation.
I don't know about that.
Okay. This is crazy. The Model State Emergency, the Model State Public Health, what is it? Emergency Public Health. I forget what it is exactly now. It's like 8 different letters in the acronym. This legislation affords extraordinary powers to state governors and state health departments in the event of a public health emergency.
Wow.
And it's been passed in whole or in part in 43 states last I chose or I looked. So this is insane, right? Yeah. This shows you, this is why people who've been in the, vaccine safety awareness and freedom arena have known and knew from the beginning that COVID was a scam because I knew about the Model State Public Health Emergency Act. I knew about the Patriot Act, the PrEP Act, the Smith-Mundt Act, the NDAA of 2012, all these things. I'm like, they're clearly setting us up to do something.
So,
okay. And then I have to say this is really important too. When you look at NGOs and you look at nonprofits who, you know, Britain installed the Nudge Committee, right? In order to influence public opinion. This can't be just about money.
Right.
These things are so premeditated and honestly so evil and, that they can't be only about money.
Absolutely. They're about a hell of a lot more than money. Money is the medium by which they take control, and it's all about control. Of course, Washington Post has this article. After 9/11, the U.S. built an anti-terror apparatus. Trump is using it at home. 25 years after the 9/11 attacks, powerful agencies and vast legal authorities created to stop another terrorist catastrophe are being turned inward, with the Trump administration using many of these powers to round up immigrants, battle drug traffickers, and target political dissent. The Office of the Director of National Intelligence, birthed in response to pre-9/11 intelligence failures, has been central to President Trump's pushing of false election conspiracies and retribution against his perceived political enemies. Trump has directed that Joint Terrorism Task Force, which spread nationwide after 2001, to harness federal and local resources, investigate groups that challenge White House views on immigration, gender, and religion. Another post-9/11 creation, U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, has aggressively surveilled and rounded up immigrants on Trump's watch, sometimes catching or killing U.S. citizens in its dragnet. As memories of the worst terrorist attack on American history fades, former U.S. officials say the rapid remolding of agencies and laws created a quarter century ago has contributed to a dimming focus on looming external threats. They cite not just anti-U.S. terrorism, which has ebbed but not disappeared, but a host of largely post-2001 challenges, including advanced artificial intelligence, cyber threats, drones, and biotechnology. Trump is dismantling or repurposing almost all the agents that were created by the Bush administration to protect us from terrorism, said John Bellinger III, who was President George W. Bush's National Security Council legal advisor on September 11th and helped craft the reforms that followed. There has been a tremendous loss of focus, Bellinger said. A new cabinet department, Homeland Security, was created along with agencies such as ICE and the Transportation Security Administration. The ODNI was created to ensure that spy agencies with different missions talk to one another. The National Counterterrorism Center would centralize terrorist threat data. The Justice Department established a new security division in 2006 to marshal counterterrorism and intelligence resources. And now they say these tools have been exploited. Well, yes, they were always meant to be. That's why they were established. That's why we warned about them at the time. Why we're warning about them now. They're setting all the precedents they need to treat American citizens like terrorists.
Ladies and gentlemen, when you go to FreedomRx, you have to understand that it's about preserving health and upholding values. Your health, your business, nobody else's. The folks that own this are patriots. They first came to me 4 years ago wanting to do this. I agreed three. They had it built about a year ago. They kept adding to it, but going through all the stuff we went through, I wanted to wait till we had a new operation to launch it with this incredible sponsor. But now it's ready. There's so many incredible things. The very best testosterone, energy, muscle, libido, mood, sexual health, PT-141. Woo, look out. Talk about the true aphrodisiac. Oxytocin protocols for men and women, longevity, recovery, all the good peptides, the NAD, all of them. HIPAA compliant. Your health information is 100% protected. They got everything. Go there now, and it supports this broadcast with the best doctors and nurses, the best backbone, the best people. Your health, your business, nobody else's. Go now to freedomrxhealth.com.
All right, folks, welcome back. Third hour of War Room Live is on. I'm going to open up the phones for your calls here momentarily. I do want to tell you about a special evening time broadcast that Alex Jones will be doing tonight with Jesse Beltran, Graphene in Human Tissues and the New Research into Ghost Technology. That will air tonight at 7 p.m. It'll be live on alexjoneslive.com/show. Be streaming on X at Real Alex Jones, as well as on Rumble, rumble.com/TheAlexJonesShowLive. So about an hour after this show ends, tune back in to the Rumble, Alex's X, or alexjoneslive.com/show to see the special broadcast tonight of the breakdown of graphene and human tissue and new research into ghost technology with Alex Jones and Jesse Beltran. Let's go ahead and open up the phone lines for calls. If you want to dial in, the number to dial is 512-266-0642. That's 512-266-0642, taking your calls on anything that we've covered up till now. In fact, I want to know, what do people think about the $5,000 bribe that Trump offered? I want to hear what people think about that. I've got James Fishback's take on it here that I want to read, but I want to know, what's your opinion? Are you in favor of this? You think this is a great idea? You can't wait to get the $5,000 cash payout for voting for Trump or not voting for Trump, just whatever. You get it regardless. Or do you think this is a outrageous betrayal of the fundamental meaning of our republic? Give us a call, 512-266-0642. This is what James Fishback had to say about it. He says, last year, I proposed the $5,000 Doge dividend that President Trump endorsed. Trump just announced a new $5,000 dividend, but it's a bad idea. Here's why. The Doge dividend was financed by Doge spending cuts. Cut waste, save money, send a portion of it back to taxpayers. This new dividend has no offsetting spending cuts. It's just new spending financed by more borrowing from China that adds to the $40 trillion in national debt when the government borrowing costs, 10-year treasury yields, are already the highest in 3 years. Unlike the Doge dividend, which was only to be sent to taxpayers, the new dividend check gets sent to everyone, which means non-taxpayers get more free money, which means more inflation. This dividend will actually worsen the problem it tries to solve. Inflation has never been solved by spending more money. If you want to save American money right now, end the Iran war. Here's how much Trump could save for us by doing that. Start with gas. It was $2.98 a gallon the day before the war began. Now it's $4.22. That's $1.24 per gallon more on 700 gallons a year for the average household, which comes out to about $900 a year in savings by bringing gas prices back to where they were before the war. Now look at diesel, which matters even more. Diesel was $3.65 a gallon per before the war. Today, it's $5.94, an all-time high. That is a 63% increase in 6 months. You may never buy a gallon of diesel in your life, but you're going to pay for it anyway because diesel moves freight. It runs the trucks, the trains, the barges, the combines, the tractors. Nearly every item on the shelf got there on diesel, which means diesel never shows up as a line item in a family budget. It shows up in the price of everything else. America burns roughly 61 billion gallons of diesel a year. At $2.29 more per gallon, that's about $140 billion in added costs moving through the supply chain, or roughly $1,000 per household once it reaches the register. Gas and diesel together, that's about $1,900 a year for the average American family. End the war and put crude oil prices back where they were in February, and the average American family saves $9,500 over the next 5 years. That's almost double the dividend check. It arrives every year instead of once. It requires no borrowing, no appropriation, and no new debt sold to China. I developed the Doge dividend because cutting wasteful spending creates real savings from which taxpayers can and should receive a dividend check. This new dividend does not do that. It's ironic that at a time when Republicans are rightly calling out socialism on the left, they would make their closing pitch at their national convention, if you vote for us, we'll give you $5,000 and make someone else pay for it. If that isn't socialism, I don't know what is. So yeah, pretty good breakdown there. Again, we could actually be saving more money than the $5,000 dividend if they would just stop taking our money and using it to fund ridiculous overseas wars that makes everything more expensive and does nothing for us, America, as a country, for our safety, our well-being, our economic standing, nothing. Nothing is benefited at all by this war. It's all for the sake of Israel, obviously. And guys, we can bring up the phone screen here. I'll go to that. I'll go to phone calls here in just a minute since they're coming in. But obviously there are no intentions of ending the Iran war at all. Trump says he doesn't think his proposed $5,000 dividend payment would need to be approved by Congress. I mean, yes, it would. What are you talking about? What are you talking about? Trump's top advisors confront possibility that the Iran war lasts through the end of the term. White House advisors have told President Trump the Iran war could last through the end of his term, contradicting public claims of a swift victory. Trump told reporters the war would end immediately after the November midterm elections because Iran cannot hold out any longer. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth has extended some Middle Eastern troop deployments into 2027 as the conflict drags on. Top White House advisors have privately raised this issue with President Trump, saying that it could last beyond Inauguration Day in January 2029. The closed-door discussions come as Trump told reporters Wednesday that the war will end immediately after the midterm elections in November because they can't hold out any longer. Meanwhile, Democrats are plotting to take on Pete Hegseth if they win in November. They're already setting up their agenda for charging basically everybody in the Trump administration over the Iran war and other things, which, yeah, good, they should. And despite everything that we hear constantly from Trump when it comes to Iran, Iran is clearly making big moves now. The Houthis have just seized a strategic Red Sea port, which is a major victory for the Iranian ally. The Iran-backed militia routed Yemeni government forces in Maka, putting the coup in a stronger position to attack ships in a crucial waterway for global trade. And the report is also that earlier today they may have seized a island that was previously held by the Saudis. And there are reports of the Saudis fleeing that area as it's seized by the Houthis. These two sides have been at war since 2014 when the Houthis seized Yemen's capital, Sana'a. Soon after, a Saudi-led military coalition began a bombing campaign to try to restore the government to power, plunging the impoverished nation into a devastating war. A fragile truce reached in 2022 has unraveled in recent months, A video circulating online and verified by the New York Times shows several pickup trucks with groups of armed men standing in their cargo beds driving through a main road in Mocha. A person behind the camera is heard saying, "Death to America, death to Israel," part of a Houthi slogan. So, I mean, clearly they're not backing down. They don't feel defeated. And Iran is now sharing a video of a U.S. vessel on fire as World War III fears explode. That's a headline from The Express. Iran posted this footage to X of a fire on board a U.S. submarine drone at the entrance of the Strait of Hormuz. So, seems like Iran is, not going anywhere. We have no ability to force them to surrender or accept defeat. So until America decides that this is not worth the investment, not worth the continued aggravation and lack of focus on domestic issues, and decide just to stop it, this will continue into the future as long as they feel like carrying it on. So there we are, folks. The forever war reignited despite literally everyone on earth opposing it except for Israel and the Jewish oligarchs that control our country. Very small number of people at the end of the day. Let's go out to your calls now. Josh in California. Thanks for calling in, Josh. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, what's going on, Harrison? I called a couple, I believe it was about actually last week, after the Killdozer guy. We got the chance to chat briefly towards the end of the show about some realizations that I was having, that me and Alex must have been on the same frequency channeling here, is about why we should like love Israel and come to repentance as a nation. So I wanted to get to the meat really and talk about what surrendering as a nation looks like. And the more and more I get into the book, I notice it's the same pattern. It's being baptized by water and then fire and then promise. There's a couple ways that I think about this. And honestly, I think the one that means the most to our Creator is that heart surrender, where we declare privately that Jesus Christ is who he says he is, being the Son of God. And then, you can do it as a public declaration as well. But I think that intimate relationship is really what he's looking for, and not trying to be like a religion, but having a relationship. And then, of course, after that, everything, gets crazy, so that you get baptized by fire. And, that's just like picking up your cross daily. Jesus is like in front of you, leading the way, asks via the Holy Spirit, and he's a free gift. He says, "Follow me," and it's the fast track to understanding the way. It's not easy. It's painful, but it's beautiful at the same time, because it's meant to glorify him. And you're not burned up when you're walking through the fire. That's the beauty of this. Your impurities are boiling out, and allow you to serve and make you more Christ-like. And the goal is not to be 1.0. That's Jesus. Like we're just trying to aim to be 0.99 fine, when he sees his reflection in us. So, I think after the water and the fire, we get to the promised land, and Revelation is gonna happen as it's written. And what a time to be alive, really. Like, heaven's on the horizon, brothers and sisters. Like, don't wait till it's too late. Your Father in heaven is watching, and he's ready and willing to work with you. Today's the day to to give him glory. Reach out, repent, be saved, and be ready. I want to say, Harrison, thank you for your service on the AJN platform, and keep up the good fight for our Lord Jesus Christ, man. He's building up warriors like you and the crew, and just God bless you, Harrison. I appreciate what you guys do here on this platform.
Well, thank you very much. That was a very powerful call. I want to know, what do you make of Christian nationalism? Because the left has tried and is continuing to try, but for years – tried to paint Christian nationalism as this boogeyman, but obviously I would categorize myself as a Christian nationalist. I think, Christian nationalism is actually a very viable path for the future, and I'm seeing more and more people reference Christian nationalism, even if it's not explicit. Over the weekend there was a football star, I think in University of Southern Mississippi. He's wearing a big Christ is King shirt. Some of the people that were involved in the Portsmouth riots in the UK, you know, you hear them talking. They're like, look, we just want a Christian country that's nationalistic, and like that's all it is. So they might not be saying I'm a Christian nationalist, but it's like clearly we want nationalism. We want a nation that is guided by Christians. That's Christian nationalism. I mean, how do you think we get to a place where our nation is designed in a way to facilitate a Christian ideology, to not force a Christian ideology, but make that the you know, general understanding in our country? I mean, what do you think about the entire Christian nationalist idea?
You know, when I think about, like, just all, you know, just before the denominations, I think about what it was called before it was, you know, declared Christians. I think it was in Antioch when they first were declared Christians, but it was referred to as the Way.
Right.
And so, you know, I think of, you know, keeping the any sort of name play out of it, just like the way to do this is the way that he told us how to do this. And, you know, you can see the fruit that we can call it Christian nationalism, but you can see the fruit of we, you know, what we have here and what we had here. And, you know, it's totally different. And so we, at some point, we have been led astray, and it's about getting back on track, getting back to the basics. And, you know, whatever we want to call that, Christian nationalism, or I think every place should have a home. Everything, you know, needs to have an origin. And so if we go back to that, I mean, that's the answer. And, you know, all the other denominations, you know, it's just, you know, those are religious space, man. I mean, we're aiming for a relationship here. And I think just getting back to that is the key. And, you know, this nation is where obviously a bunch of people want to come to. And for many reasons, like the freedoms that we enjoy, et cetera. But I mean, Alex often calls it the best house in a bad neighborhood, but it's like, let's just make a good neighborhood. And, you know, it's got to start somewhere. And so I think if we come back to this origin point, and we get down back to the basics here, that we can build up from there in a way that is, you know, holy, you know, where it's, where we're supposed to be, like, you know, being Christ-centered instead of all this division that is given to us through the media. That's, you know, they try to make it a black versus white, left versus right, all this jazz. But really it's about good versus evil. So, you know, let's get back to being good, and quit getting taken advantage of by evil, because there's a lot of that out there. And, you know, it's time, everybody. I'm telling you, there's frequencies that you know, we all operate on. You know, you can't have a 27 megahertz, you know, control 49 megahertz RC car. Okay. We got to get back on this frequency of the Way. And, you know, today's that day. So, yeah. Reach out and let's be Christian nationalists. Let's
Amen.
Do it.
Amen. Great call. Thank you so much for that, Josh. Really great stuff. Let's go to Tyson in Idaho now. Thanks for calling in. Tyson, you're on the air.
Hi, Harrison. How you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. I kind of agree with what Josh said about the whole, you know, just recognize that we're a Christian nation and stuff. And you were asking him how we could do that. I think we could take an example from Putin. I think he did a pretty good job of that. You know, let all other religions exist. But, I mean, we are a Christian nation, and put that above the rest, you know what I mean? And reflect that in policy.
Yeah, so how would that look, or how would that be implemented here in America?
I honestly couldn't even think of a way to do that, especially with the way things stand. But like I said, the more I learned about how he's doing it over there in Russia, and I don't know, we could follow his example, I suppose.
Yeah, well, and you know, the church there, I don't think has an official position in the government, but clearly, you know, it's intertwined. You know, it's weird because, you know, America does have, you know, the First Amendment as part of its founding, and that's the freedom of religion. Now, whether that was meant to apply to literally every religion, or if that was just supposed to help to not allow the internecine, the denominational warfare that went on in England that they were trying to prevent from happening here. I don't really know, but it's bizarre because in England, it's like they are a Christian nation. Like their king is the head of their church. So you would think that if anywhere could continue to maintain their Christian identity as a nation, it would be somewhere like Britain, but they seem like they've lost it even more than we have at a certain point. And when you actually look into the Church of England, it's not even really a church anymore. It's more of a social club for lesbians. So, you know, that's not great. So I don't know really what it would look like either, but I think everybody kind of understands now. It's like, you know, we used to be a more Christian nation. Now we're not. Everything's gotten worse. Maybe that's a part of it. Maybe we do need to get back to the, you know, really top down, you know, Christian mindset. I don't know. What else you got for me, Tyson?
Well, I was listening to what you were saying earlier about just, you know, seizing whatever levers of power we can. And then you just had a segment on with the gal. I had to turn off the phone because I was calling you, but she was mentioning her fears about, you know, the STAVE Act and like what it could absolutely be possibly set up for, you know, as a globalist tool. And I've always had those fears just because they seem to do that time and again, especially with the way they pass laws and tons of extras packed in there. I think we need to move forward with caution and keep that in mind. And I've noticed, like, you know, some of the big streamers and stuff, some are probably friends of your show, like Adam and Gold and stuff, they're calling for the same thing. Just we need to do this by any means possible, whatever powers we can seize and, you know, do that. I think we just need to have a little caution and just go full throttle because we can set ourselves up for a trap that they're anticipating, you know?
Yeah, well, we gotta think about that and try not to fall into any trap, but also just not give up and not allow the trap to close. And it's easier said than done, but, you know, clearly the best position for the globalists is to have us in a mindset that we don't even try because we accept defeat before we even fight. So we gotta, I mean, whatever we can be doing, however you can be doing stuff, I mean, we gotta pull ourselves out of the fire before we burn. Thank you for the call, Tyson. Let's go to Matt in Minnesota now. Matt, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, Anderson. Thanks for having me on. I got to admit, I feel a little bit thrown under the bus having to follow Josh and Tyson there. Those guys were great and made a lot of good points. You know, I just came in to talk about the Daddy Trump bucks and what I would do with that money.
What would you do?
And I would wait for the Megatards to come out with the Trump dividend meme coin. I would buy it high and sell it at zero since that's where the dollar is going to go. If they keep doing what they're doing.
Yeah, maybe that's why Trump is saying that they won't need to, they won't need Congress to approve it. Maybe it'll be Trump coin. It'll be $5,000 of Trump coin that'll sell you. Maybe you get to choose. You can either be, Trump coin or, you know, one of the other crap coins that he pumped up. Yeah, I mean, but seriously, what is your thought? I mean, do you think this is going to work? Do you think people are going to go, well, I wasn't going to vote for Republicans, but $5,000 sounds pretty good. I guess I'll do it. I mean, I don't even think people are going to buy it. I don't think it's going to work. I mean, do you think this is even going to be effective as a vote gathering strategy, Matt?
I sure hope not. If it is, then that's, I mean, I guess our country is kind of feeling sad right now, but that would be really sad if that does do it.
Yeah.
You know, with the money we were supposed to get already and just the inflation that he's caused, I mean, I can't imagine that we're that dumb.
Oh boy! Do never underestimate the stupidity of the American people. I think we're perfectly dumb enough to vote for this sort of stuff. Again, I don't even think it's I think people are genuinely more concerned about the long term effects of the economic policies of Trump than even the immediate term. Right? I mean, I think if you told people, "Hey, I'll either give you $5,000 or I will," you know, deport immigrants, I think people would choose the deportation. I don't even think people prefer the money. I think it'd be like, save your money, give me my country back. Save the cash, give me deportations, get me out of the Iran war, make my streets safe. I mean, that's worth more than money. I mean, you could get $5,000 right now, but that's not going to help you afford a single month of rent in a neighborhood where you won't get stabbed walking down the street at night. So how about we, you know, make our money worth more by providing us a life that is nice rather than give us money while destroying the very fabric of our society. It's just a ridiculous thing. We'll be right back.
COVID from my gardener. And he had it first, and then I got it. And I was like, did I grab the hose or what? You know, what was it? I don't know. But I knew the guy for 20 years. And we both went to the same hospital. And he died and I didn't. Gee. I think we both got remdesivir.
Which is not good.
Not good. Not good.
Causes kidney failure.
I know. I couldn't walk for 3 months after I had that stuff.
Really?
Because it kills you. I found out afterwards it kills you. And that's why I wonder about Fauci.
Oh, you should wonder about that guy.
I don't believe that there is anything that can afflict mankind that hasn't got a natural cure for it. I think that there has to be. It just makes sense to me. Now, I couldn't prove that, but I just believe that.
Yeah.
That there's got to be something that cures things. And I'll tell you a good story.
Okay.
I have three friends. All three of them had stage 4 cancer. All three of them don't have cancer right now at all. And they had some serious stuff going on.
And what did they take?
They took some, what you've heard they take.
Ivermectin.
Fembendazole.
Fembendazole, yeah. I'm hearing that a lot.
They drank hydrochloride something or other.
There's studies on that now where people have proven that they've...
People drinking methylene blue and stuff like that.
Yeah, methylene blue, which was a fabric dye.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a textile dye. You know, they find it has profound effects on your mitochondria.
Yep.
Yeah.
This stuff works, man.
It turned out that $2.4 billion was paid just to CVS and Walgreens in the first year of the pandemic to not prescribe hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin. Then it turned out billions more was paid, up to a billion, to not give people budesonide, which is just an inhalable steroid. And I got the second variant of COVID, and believe me, it's real, because I never felt like that. I felt like a gorilla was on my chest for 2 weeks. But I stayed on air, fought through it. But it was hell on earth. Almost killed my dad. Almost killed Rob Dude. It was budesonide. Ivermectin, other stuff that got him out of it. Get yourself some highest grade, medical grade, ultramethylene blue, methylene red, the bovine colostrum, the very best type of creatine. We got a lot of the basics there as well. These are amazing, game-changing products that I feel so good and lost so much weight and so young taking. It's all there at thealexjonesstore.com. Widest selection of Patriot apparel, all sorts of cool tactical fanny packs and a lot of other great stuff. But a lot of those special items only come in, you know, a few times a year because they're hard to source and hard to get. We have the America Only line. We got the 1776 line of clothes. A lot of really cool designs, a lot of really cool hats, hundreds and hundreds of different hats. TheAlexJonesStore.com, and that's how we're funding our operation, and how we're going to expand here at the Alex Jones Network. So I want to salute and thank you all. Now, if you go to the same folks at Bigly have 1776rx.health, you can get medical grade, it's through a doctor, through the portal, very quick and easy to do, minbenzidol and ivermectin that are certified to be very strong anti-parasitics. Total detox, though, and it does a bunch of other things the bad guys don't want you to know about. So get your ivermectin, it's all in one pill, with minbenzidol right now. Go through the nurse right there in the portal and get it now at 1776rx.health. A very smart move for everyone, in my view, to do a few times a year as a detox. But talk to the nurse, talk to your own doctor, do your own research, and then get your minbenzidol and ivermectin all in one pill at 1776rx.health. That's 1776, just 1776rx.health now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Do you make the deal? Do you accept the trade? In exchange for never-ending war. But hey, that's not all you receive. You also receive false hope. You receive the pretense of attempting deportations without ever actually getting the deportations. Yeah, so I guess that is all you receive, actually. Actually, now that I think about it, everything else is an illusion. So, yeah, endless war. It's the ultimate outcome of all of this. I'm going to go back out to your phone calls here in just a second. I got to play a video clip first. Clip number 13 here. We'll go to it. The City Journal at city-journal.org has the story, COVID masks, gay communism, and Hassan Piker inside the Socialism 2026 conference. So radical leftists gathered in Chicago to advance the abolition of police, prisons, capitalism, and the family. And as you watch this and as you hear them express themselves, I wonder if you'll feel like I felt, which is like, this should be illegal. I don't know how we make this illegal, but this should not exist. Now, I don't know where we go from here. I don't know how we end this, the existence of this thing. But, you know, politics is supposed to be like a replacement for war in a lot of ways. And in the absence of a political structure, you basically just have the strong rule, right? The strongest warlord just gets to dictate terms to everybody else, and you kind of just have to deal with that. Now, we replaced that brutalism with representative democracy, but at a certain point, people are going to get sick of having to listen to people that are all stupid and weaker than they are. I'm sick of it. I don't understand why I have to share a country with people like this, like you're about to witness. Why we have to subject ourselves, not even just to their policies, like that would be bad enough, but even just to their arguments. Why do we have to, why are we even having these discussions? Why is this something that has to be confronted in argument? Like it's, I don't even know what to make of it, because it's just like the fact that these people can even exist in our country is like evidence that we're failures. Like these people shouldn't exist. And like it was a mistake to create a society where these people could exist. And I just want to know how we undo this mistake, how we correct this mistake of allowing these people to exist. I'm not calling for anything being done to them. I just want them utterly disenfranchised. I want to allow them to have their little meetings. They can talk all they want about communism and intersectional feminism and whatever else. I just don't want them to have any ability to affect policy in the real world. I don't know exactly how we bring this about, but you're about to hear a compilation of these people talking. And we'll comment after, but these are the people that somehow are like winning the conversation. This is the Democratic Socialists of America. These are the people, for some inexplicable reason, our fellow Americans think have their best interests in mind. It is truly inexplicable. Let's watch. This is the Socialism 2026 conference, a little compilation put together by Stu Smith and the City Journal. Let's watch.
Please be gay, do crimes with me. And it's also weird just on the laws, not real thing. As an abolitionist,
the ethos of abolition,
an abolitionist positionality, of
an abolitionist liberatory ecosystem,
debates in abolition.
In abolition, especially as you, if you think of it as both methodology and ideology.
When you abolish the police, you do burn down police stations, I imagine. Indeed, we have. But, or some people have, allegedly.
To the abolition of rent, nuclear weapons, prison, debt, even monopoly power, imperialism. You name it.
And abolition is what we are making rather than the erasure of what is. So when I say, as I've said many times, I know it's a meme, abolitionist presence, I mean it.
And by feminism, I mean anti-racist feminism, anti-capitalist feminism, abolition feminism.
As abolitionist praxis.
It has been consistent with a black feminist, black left feminist praxis to be in solidarity with Palestine.
A prefigurative political praxis.
Like, there's a difference between solidarity as a political value and solidarity as organizing practice.
Long march towards dialectical materialism.
To deepen the struggle, to broaden the struggle.
You know, love, study, and struggle is a framework for action.
Struggles across our history.
Some of us are card-carrying communists. Some of us democratic socialists. Some of us pan-Africanists, radical feminists, anti-imperialists, police abolitionists.
We need a junkie communism.
You know, Marx and Engels were actually really influenced by us, by the Haudenosaunee, and they saw us as like this, they called us primitive communists.
So maybe you should never take your commie hat off.
Deshaun is a queer and trans theorist, anarcho-communist, Afro-pessimist, and Southern-born and bred abolitionist.
I am not okay, comrades.
For over a decade, I've been part of a sort of transgender materialist and anti-work trans Marxist effort in revolutionary feminism in the West that theorizes social reproduction and trans social reproduction and the positive supersession of capitalist care.
Imperialism, colonialism, and capitalism are deeply intertwined.
To learn them is to decolonize our minds, right?
As long as we haven't figured out how to get rid of capitalism, Marx is relevant.
To black liberation, to disabled and sick liberation, to indigenous liberation, to trans and queer liberation, to the liberation of Palestine.
Our way of getting out of this requires us to bring these systems down. It's absolutely essential.
Now, whether or not we call it a general strike or whether or not we call it a national economic blackout really doesn't matter.
One of the best things that got organized during this was what we can't call a general strike, because then that would acknowledge illegal strikes, but we can call an economic blackout.
Organizing in general and political organizing in particular.
So again, I mean, it's like you need a friggin' thesaurus to even figure out what the hell they're talking about. And it needs to be a thesaurus written by an insane person. A thesaurus written by a retarded socialist who can actually define these utterly meaningless terms like abolition. Just, you know, hey, it sounded great when there were slaves because you were actually abolishing something. Now you're just abolishing the functions of our society. Like, my thing is, these people think that they're fighting a system. They think they're enemies to a system. Like, their goal is to tear down a system. The system, of course, facilitates everything that they do. This is the output of our entire system, our academy system, our university system, our legal system. Like, this is what it produces, and yet they want to destroy it. If it was actually the system that they said it was, then they wouldn't be able to do what they're doing now. And frankly, they shouldn't be able to. I mean, it just seems to me like if you've got this group of people, and let's just say you've got, you know, RoboCop, Judge Dredd opens the door and is like, what are you guys doing? And the honest response is, we're plotting to overthrow the government. We're plotting to overthrow this whole system. We're trying to tear this system down. The appropriate response, I think, should be, then you're all under arrest. What the hell are you talking about? You can't just publicly say that and get away with it. How are we going to run a system where people who entire purpose explicitly is the destruction of the system, and they're just allowed to do that? That's crazy. I think that's genuinely insane that we allow this to operate. They're literally sitting there like, we're plotting an economic blackout so that we can destroy the system of the United States. And for some reason, we're convinced that we just have to argue against this. I don't understand why we have to argue against this. I don't understand why we don't just arrest them. I don't know. I mean, I get, you know, obviously it's a tricky situation, but is it really? Because again, you don't have to be a robot. You don't have to go, well, if we're applying it to this, we have to apply it to this. Cause I still, to this day, Rand Paul, like 2 days ago, put out some tweet that was saying like, well, if we do this, you know, you gotta be careful. You know, it was about, ICE or somebody surveilling the No Kings protest. And he's like, hey, if we're allowed to, you know, if we allow these federal organizations to spy on peaceful protesters, you know, there's no guarantee that they won't do that to us. And it's like, they threw 1,000 people in prison over January 6th. What are you talking about? The idea that if we don't do something, the left won't do it. Like, what are we talking about? Are you living in fantasy world? The world we live in now, the left is unmoored, unhinged, unrestricted by any consideration of precedent or humanitarianism or equality. Like, they don't care. They're going to use these systems to destroy us unless we use the systems to destroy them. That's just where we're at this point. So while part of me is like, ooh, gee, that would be really dangerous to, like, you know, be like, oh, this, we're going to arrest people for talking about their politics. Like, don't you say you want the system to go down? Aren't you just as guilty? It's just like, no, I don't think that's what's happening here. I think when you have a bunch of dumbass socialists who are like, we're queer Pan-African abolitionists and we're here to destroy your country, I think we can just say, well, you're not adding anything. You're just a force of destruction. You're just a force of annoyance and confusion for people. You dress up your utterly retarded beliefs in the most highfalutin vocabulary words your teacher made up. And we're supposed to accept it then? Why do we have to contend with this? Why do we have to sit here and go, well, actually, I think burning down police stations is a bad thing. It's like, what are we talking? Of course, what? If somebody's up there going, we're burning police stations down, maybe just arrest them. There you go. Problem freaking solved. Because there's just something about these universally hideous, overweight, blue-haired morons who would literally die within a day if they weren't served sustenance on a platter by our entire civilization that, again, they're trying to tear down. Like, we have to sit here and entertain them, entertain these ideas. If there was actually a system they were fighting against, it would crush them. So you've got these people LARPing, pretending that they're the resistance, pretending that they're engaged in something that, oh, the fascists and the imperialists are trying to stop them, but they just can't. The groundswell of resistance from the people. And it's like, the media is on your side. The government is on your side. Academia is on your side. The big tech companies are on your side. The DAs are on your side. Why are they, though? I mean, the real question is, why are all of these people in positions of power? And how do we get just normal dudes in these positions of power? How do we get just normal people that can see what's going on and will just not put up with the BS? How do we get some Joseph McCarthy's, some Richard Nixon's in power? So they can just go, yeah, we're not being communist. Anybody trying to make us communist is an enemy, and we'll destroy them with the power of the state. And all these people can really feel what it's like to be an actual resistance movement. I mean, it would really be giving them everything that they pretend they are. It would be actually fulfilling their fantasy of being a despised, you know, resistance against this evil system. I wish our system identified people like you and crushed you. And then you wouldn't exist. Our system instead identifies people like me and tries to crush us, only we're smarter than you and they can't quite do it. They can't quite get away with it. There would be no problem with crushing you. With crushing you, the socialists, I mean, if the government wanted to, you would not exist. You're allowed to exist. So I don't know why we allow them to exist. Over Labor Day weekend, X caught fire with clips from the 2026 Socialism Conference hosted by radical left Haymarket Books in Chicago. More than 3,000 socialists descended to this place to feature, to hear radical activists and authors such as Angela Davis, Sophie Lewis, and Hassan Piker. City Journal's Stu Smith has highlighted some of the conference's most controversial live-streamed moments, a health fascism panel that described GLP-1s as fat genocide and being dysgenic as aspirational, abortion activists presenting Piker with a Satan's School of Gay Communism hat, Weather Underground alumni Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn in attendance, and professors from Columbia, the City University of New York, New York University, and the University of Illinois, Chicago, promoting radical activism. But while Stu closely monitored the live stream, City Journal Associate Editor Aidan Grogan reported directly from the conference, especially on panels that weren't publicly broadcast. Between the two of us, here's what we saw and heard. More than 3 years after the COVID-19 pandemic ended, the conference still required attendees to wear masks at all times, except for when speakers were actively presenting. Some of the sessions were overcrowded, hot, sweaty, and smelly. Conference staff did not allow comrades to sit on the ground in the aisles because it was considered a safety hazard for attendees with mobility issues. Rather than professional attire, the typical outfit consisted of denim jeans and radical t-shirts and buttons displaying slogans like Black Lives Matter or Free Palestine. Throughout conference spaces, both speakers and attendees spouted left-wing jargon buzzwords repeatedly, organizing solidarity, praxis, resistance, liberation, and above all, abolition, not just of a market economy and private property, but also police, prisons, border security, gender, the family, and the state itself. Accordingly, speakers tended to glorify pre-capitalist non-Western indigenous cultures as possessing moral purity, in contrast to the capitalist system's greed and exploitation at the hands of the white man. As environmental activist Tori Tsui said in the concluding session, we are nature defending itself. So, you know, I just refuse to actually like debate these things or to, like, tell you why abolition of the state of America is not something we have to sit here and endure and allow them to carry out. And that if our own system won't do something about this, you know, I don't know how long we're going to just like patiently wait for our government to actually defend us from them when we don't need them. When defending ourselves would be easier without the government interference, because if we were to actually try to defend ourselves, the government would, of course, crack down on us instantaneously. With that, I'll go out to your calls. We've got Gage in Oregon first. Go ahead, Gage, you're on the air.
Hey, Harrison. I think you're asking some good questions this evening, and I wanted to address a couple of them. The first is Trump offering the $5,000. At least the way it's being put, it kind of seems like he's offering $5,000. I don't know if he's saying that if the Congress gets elected, that that'll be possible for him to give $5,000. But it does sound like a barter, and I think it can be really revealing of his character and of our character as a nation, that we are bought out and that money, you know, money talks. And I really think, like God says, we can't put our trust in men. We have to put our trust in God, because he does have full control over all people, you know, whether it, all the kings and authorities, he can raise them and crush them, and we're all in his hands. And I just think the importance of us to pray for people too, can be more powerful than maybe even anything we could do physically.
Well, certainly, and we certainly will do that. But yeah, I think just the offer of the $5,000, it's like, I don't know, if I was still a Trump supporter, which I'm not because of the Iran war and other obvious things, but it would kind of disgust me. I would just kind of be like, really, dude, that's what you're pitching? Like, it's just low down. It's just, I don't know, pathetic. It's just a violation of what his party's supposed to represent. So yeah, no, it's pathetic. But what are your takes on some of the other stuff I've been bringing up?
Yeah, you were also talking about kind of like what a lot of Christians call Christian nationalism, or, you know, how do we get back the kingdom on earth? And also, I was kind of addressing that in the fact that God is in control of anything. And so I think that would be an impossible thing to see happen without the power of God. And we know that he is going to do that in the end, you know, when his son is revealed from heaven with the angels. But I do think, yeah, it's sad, but we should also prepare ourselves, you know, to die for Christ. That's how the kingdom was won before. We see that after Christ ascends into heaven, all the disciples are martyred for God. And, you know, after that, there's generations of believers that are martyred all over the world. And then you start seeing the kingdom of God grow in power. So I don't know. It is scary, all this stuff. And I really appreciate how, you know, your work and that you guys, you know, are sharing a lot of the information. So, yeah, I listen to you guys a lot and pray for you guys. So God bless you.
Well, thank you very much. And we really do appreciate that. And, you know, I've always said, if there's nothing else that I can offer you, I'm going to tell you the truth. And obviously, I think it's kind of funny to me because, like, on Tuesday, I guess, my show, I just felt very, like, low energy. I thought it was a really bad show. But for some reason, that show got more compliments than I get on most shows. Like, I got a ton of comments just being like, wow, today's show was really good. And I'm just like, maybe I have no idea what's going on because I thought it was a terrible show. But other people seem to like it. Yeah, and but you know what? If I'm looking at the world as it is and it looks freaking hopeless and annoying, then that's the attitude I'm going to take. Like, I'm not going to get up here and spin a lie or tell you everything is golden when it's actually crap. And so I don't know, I don't know what other person you can follow that will promise that and then uphold it, that, like, I can't promise to always be chipper and upbeat and, you know, laughing at this stuff. Sometimes it's just going to be annoying and tedious and frustrating. And when that's the case, that's what you're going to get from me. So I'm not going to put on any pretense. I'm not going to tell you something that's not true just because you want to hear it. And at the end of the day, things right now are not looking good. And I don't have any easy answers. And that's just the way it is. So that's what I'm going to tell you. I could very easily pretend to have answers. I could very easily go, you know, well, it's, you know, this Brandon Gill guy, we just vote for him and everything would be great and we just got to keep going. And it's just like, but that's just not true. So I'm going to just tell you the truth. And on days where I'm watching Donald Trump try to give away $5,000 of my money to everybody else, just so he can keep his war going, like, I'm just going to tell you what BS that is. It's how it is. Sanity is treason in the empire of the insane. It's absolutely true. Let's go. We got time for one more caller. We'll go to Larry in Idaho. Larry in Idaho, thanks so much for calling in. You're on the air. We got a minute left.
Hey, how you doing? This is Larry in Idaho.
Good. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, you were talking about Christian nationalism, and that's something I've been studying and thinking about for a while. First, you know, if we're not actively, as Christian people, building a distinctly Christian culture, we're not going to have one because other people will build theirs, and we see that them trying and opposing us. multiculturalism is just a lie. So anyway, there is a government given in the scriptures, and I've been listening, and everybody seems to miss it. It's pretty interesting. It was given in the Old Testament under Moses. It was in Deuteronomy chapter 1 and Exodus chapter 18, where they would set up a system where every 10 families would elect a representative that they know that represents their interests as families. And then they would have representatives of 50s, 100s, and 1000s, and I'm sure it can go way beyond that.
Well, and that's the classic construction of a republic. I mean, I am a Republican. I don't like the party, but that is the best form of government, absolutely.
The atrazine generators have been destroyed. Bring in the water filters.
Releasing the water filters.
This is a good start, but we're going to need 1,000 more of these bad boys.
Thank you, Alex. Let the oceans be cleansed of this monstrous chemical.
They wanted to download my brain, but I downloaded theirs. It reversed all their demonic globalist plan. Team Humanity!
What makes a man a man? Testosterone. And today's men have 25% less of it than their fathers did. Does that make me 25% less of a man? Don't answer that. Answer this instead. FreedomRxHealth.com gets you evaluated by a licensed provider, real labs, and compounded testosterone built for you. More energy, more drive, more stamina, if you catch our meaning. Low testosterone after 35 is common and treatable. FreedomRx.com. Get your labs, get it back.
This is an emergency transmission from FEMA Region 6 in occupied North America.
There is a war. It's happening now. It will decide the fate of humanity. The time has come to choose sides. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. Share the links now at alexjoneslive.com. Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.